Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, February 3rd, 2018. This is episode 1459. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass, then delivers them to your door, perfect, ready to display right out of the box. Visit fracture.me and use the code TechGuy15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We kind of, this is the show where we give you a map of the future and how to use it and what it all means. Augmented reality, virtual reality, smartphones, smart watches, you know, all that stuff. 888-827-5536. That's the number, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Please feel free. Feel free to ring my chimes if you've got a question about technology, about what's going on in this wild world of ours. It was a very big week for technology companies. They all announced their quarterly earnings, as they are wont to do a month after the quarter ends. And everybody, it's, you know, you look at it and it's up, up, up. Alphabet, Google, their parent company called Alphabet now. Alphabet's revenue up 24%. But because of the new tax law, they actually lost money. They had an additional tax expense of $9.9 billion. However, what that money went to is paying taxes for funds kept overseas to avoid the tax. Getting into tax law is complicated and boring, but that money's coming back to the U.S. So, you know, the pool of money increased. Let's put it that way. eBay lost money because they had to pay $3.1 billion in taxes. Lenovo lost money because they had to pay $400 million in taxes. But I think in all cases, this is money coming back into their coffers. It's not like they're going broke. I guess the one that's most interesting, we always kind of spend the most energy looking at, is Apple. Record revenue, record profits. That's every quarter, record revenue, record profits. I don't know how they do it. Year-over-year revenue was down, though, 5%. Quarterly iPhone sales down 1% year-over-year. Year-over-year means this quarter last year. You can't compare this quarter with last quarter because the new phones came out at the end of last quarter, stuff like that. But I think that's an interesting one because they came out with two new phones in the end of 2017, right? The iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10. Very confusing. If you were an alien and you were, okay, explain this to me. They came out with the iPhone 8. Yeah. But they didn't do a 9. No. They did an iPhone 10. Yep. But instead of writing it out in a Western numeral, they wrote it in a Roman numeral. Yep. Is that the iPhone X? No, it's the 10. Okay. Whatever you say. You know, it's interesting because Windows skipped 9 as well. Windows went from, I don't know why, 8.1 to 10. Is there something about the number 9 that you're not telling me? No iPhone. Will there be? We don't even know. Maybe there'll be an iPhone 9 and an iPhone 11. We don't know. No one knows. No one understands. Apple said there are 1.3 billion active devices around the world. That's a record for them. I don't know. It was hard to tell if they include Macs in that. I guess they wouldn't make much of a difference if they did. They're talking really iPhones. 70% of Apple's revenue comes from the iPhone. The iPad is 7%. The Macintosh is 8%. Tiny little fractions of the overall. In fact, they made more money on what they call services, which is Apple Music and iCloud. They made more money on that than they did on the Mac or the iPad. And then they say we're going to make more and more. Yes, we are. Revenue, 80. This is for 3 months. I want to be very clear. They almost made $30 billion a month. Revenue. They don't get to keep it all. They only get to keep about a third of it. Aw. $10 billion a month profit. What? It's amazing, isn't it? Oh, it's amazing. But iPad sales were up, Mac sales were up, and iPhone sales were down. Neither big changes, but still interesting, I think. Yeah? 13% more revenue than last year, this time last year. So there you go. That's total revenue, as I said, almost $30 billion a year, $88.3 billion a year. Profit, $20 billion. 20 in 3 months. It's kind of unimaginable, isn't it? They say they're getting all the money back that they've been storing overseas. You know, they use a tax dodge. Legal. I'm not saying it's illegal, but it's still kind of a dodge. It's called the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. If I were making this up, I couldn't. Double. And by the way, if you go to your tax, your CPA, your go down to H&R Block, say, excuse me, I would like to do the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. He'll send you to the coffee shop. He doesn't know. Unless he reads the news and knows what Apple's up to. It's a complicated thing. You see, what you have to do the double Irish and the Dutch sandwich is you have to transfer the intellectual property rights. You know, the patents, trademarks, copyrights, transfer them to a subsidiary overseas, in this case, Ireland, where the corporate tax was for many years zero, still pretty low. By the way, the EU's mad at them and says, you have to pay this. You have to get this money. You can't do that. That's not right. So they transfer the intellectual property rights to Ireland where the tax rate's low. And then they pay a license fee. Apple pays itself a license fee for building the iPhone into Ireland, channeling billions of dollars in profit into Ireland. I think the last time I looked, it was $262 billion into Ireland. But that's not enough. No, then you do the Dutch sandwich. Or is it? It's a double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. This one I don't really understand. It has to do with, I think, the Canary Islands. Although lately somebody said that Apple's storing its cash in the thinly populated Jersey Islands, where mostly known for Jersey cows. It's a small island off the coast of England. Apparently, it has no corporate tax either. Well, the new tax bill, thank goodness, kind of forced them to take the money back. They will be paying taxes on it, 15%. That's a lot less than the old corporate rate of 35%, even less than the new corporate rate of 21%. So that's where all that money's going from all these companies into the tax bill. And then Apple's going to get a pretty big windfall, hundreds of billions of dollars to bring into the United States, which they're going to use. They say there'll be none left by the end of it. Because it turns out, really, it's not Apple's money, it's the shareholders' money. So they're going to spend it in stock buybacks, which reduces the number of total shares, which means each investor has shares worth more. So the investors like that. Dividends, they announced a dividend. They just give you cash. Thank you for buying Apple stock. Here's some money. And then I guess, what was the other part? I don't even remember. R&D, investment. Making more money. Those are really the only things they can do with it. Apple can't just say, hey, let's throw a big party. It'd be a big party. Imagine what a $200 billion party would be. It'd be a big party. They can't do that. So they have to invest in things that make money, including a new corporate headquarters, $30 billion corporate headquarters. Didn't they just build one? That spaceship. Happy birthday to open source software. Do you know what open source software is? Software that is made available so that you can modify it. And it's free, not as in it doesn't cost anything, although mostly it does, but free as in liberated. 20 years ago today, the Open Software Initiative started. Open source software was born. And you use it every day if you didn't know. Many websites, all Android phones are based on open source software. Pretty cool stuff. We're going to get to the phones in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to the phones right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, the lovely and talented Kim Schaffer jamming you today on the phones. That's her instrument of choice.
The phone?
The phone. You're a maestro of the phone.
Yeah, it's the only musical talent I have.
You do a good job. Kim will answer your call at 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536 if you want to get on the show. And then she will prepare you for your debut, not to scare anybody, on national radio. Not to scare anybody.
But a lot of people are listening. No.
No, it's just you. That's right. Yeah, I know. Because sometimes people hyperventilate and I don't like it. It's not good for radio. Yeah. I'm trying to remember if I've gotten so kind of, I've been doing this for a long time. And it doesn't.
A couple years.
Yeah, I almost feel like I'm just like just sitting here gabbing with you.
Well, you are.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You are.
I'm not really aware of, you know.
Pay no attention to those 300 radio stations throughout the country.
Let's. It's best if none of us.
Or something like that. So I've heard.
So who should I start with, Ms. Schaffer?
Brian in L.A., he was trying to rename a file, and somehow
all
of them, 600, to the same name. And
what? That doesn't even seem possible.
No, it doesn't.
Thank you, Kim. Let's get to the root of this one. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Believe me, it's not possible, but...
But it happened.
But here we are, yeah. I was using a trusted command of F2, you know, to edit, like I've done 100 times before. And all of a sudden, it's about 600 files. It didn't rename all of them, because there's another 500 or 600 that weren't renamed to the same thing, Tylenol, January Tylenol or something like that, something I keep a record of. The only difference between them is, you know, they have a number, like...
Ah, yeah, they'd have to.
Yeah.
Because you can't have this one two files with the same name or that.
Exactly, yeah.
So they added 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all the way up to 300.
Yeah, so, you know, this makes me feel real good about the whole thing. I went and Googled it and said, well, like, how the heck does this happen, renaming a whole bunch of files at once or something like that, whatever I typed.
What did Google tell you?
Well, Google told me other people, it's happened to other people.
Yeah, it's a typo.
And the first story I heard was a guy's 12-year-old, and I said, thanks.
No, it's easy to do. It's a typo. So it goes back to DOS days.
Oh, to DOS.
Yeah. F2 is, you know, just a file rename command attached to a function key. But it opens up a box, and in the box you have old name, new name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. If, by any chance, a stray little asterisk should get in there.
Yeah.
Then asterisk is a wild card.
Yes.
Yeah. You remember that from DOS? Like, if you wanted to rename everything that was .txt, you'd go *.txt.
I still use it every now and then or something. Yeah.
The problem is that first. I don't know what happened because I'm not. I'm not clairvoyant. I can't see you doing it. But my guess is the first field is highlighted when you open up when you press F2.
Right.
If you accidentally hit *. Or maybe started typing Tylenol, and then somehow star got in there, and then you tabbed to the next field and you gave it the new name, it would say, it would expand that star one by one going through every file in that directory.
Oh, okay.
So my guess is that something like that happened. It's unfortunately an easy thing to do by accident, because the star key, you know, it's right there, it's right above the I and the U, and you know if you were going to hit an 8, maybe you accidentally hit the shift and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
I would have done better to simply open it and do a save as, and that would have done.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just, you know, I mean, yeah. these things happen. Even a 12-year-old can do it.
Yeah, even a 12-year-old. Yeah.
So there are, the good news is Windows has a number of kind of mass file renaming programs.
Uh-huh.
The problem is how did you, were each of these, uniquely named?
Were they what?
Like each file had its own unique name. They weren't related?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. The only thing they had in common was that they all seemed to be document files, DOC, DOCX, and even OBX, which is an open book file.
Yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with it. Well, they're all Word files. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you can – the problem is you can rename them just in a mass way, just the same way you did already. But you don't know what the original names are. And as far as I know, there's no way to get back to that original name.
Yeah, well, the only thing I have found, which could be a new hobby, when I open one, you know, the content hasn't changed. And I couldn't figure out what it was. The only other thing I was thinking is I do have, this is quite a Carbonite question. So I have Carbonite. Now, it'll have, obviously, all these things, these new names that are all pretty much the same except for that number. But will it still have the old ones?
No. Well, that's the problem.
Carbonite
is going to – what Carbonite's going to do, if memory serves, is it's going to – you're now going to have two copies, the old name and the new name of the same.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So, yeah, you could – that's – boy, you're brilliant. That's where a backup will save you. Now, by the way, if that happens, you go, usually you can undo if you undo it right away.
Yeah.
But you have to you can't have to hit Control-Z right away. Otherwise.
I knew something bad was happening, and I hit everything I could, but it apparently.
Whoops. So if the undo command, it only works, you know, while that dialog box is open.
I really need to have one of these, add the smart speaker kind of routine in there and say, no, I didn't mean that.
I know. I know. But they, you know, people hate that, too. That slows them down. They don't want that either.
It's true. It does, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's hard. I mean.
But I do have Carbonite.
With great power comes great responsibility, and that file rename tool actually turns out to be pretty powerful.
Leo Laporte says, do it right.
don't hit whatever you do. There's other ones, by the way, besides asterisk, there's also, and you may remember this from your DOS days, a question mark. That's for a single character. Asterisk is for multiple characters.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. They call it file. This is not a good term. They call it file globbing. But I think that you're in luck that you have. This is where a backup can help you, and we don't often talk about this. But backing up doesn't just mean the contents; it can also mean the name. So yes, Carbonite will have those same files with those names. You could do a mass restore, and you're back. You're back where you were.
Yeah.
So you solved your own problem. Well done, and you gave a plug to our sponsor.
I did.
Even better done. Hey, it's nice to talk to you. I'm sorry that happened, but yeah, that can happen, Brian.
Okay, can I ask one other thing?
Real quick.
Just about the Spectre.
Yeah, hold on a second. I'll take this one off the air. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry about that. We had that music tells me I'm done.
Yeah.
Spectre, yes. What about it?
Well, now, we haven't done anything in particular except we just keep doing updates.
Yeah, that's pretty much all you can do.
That's all you can do,
You're lucky if, you know, some people, in fact, Intel this week, which is really frustrating, announced, oops, you don't want to hear Intel say oops.
Yeah.
That's almost as bad as a brain surgeon saying oops.
Yeah.
Intel said, we pushed out a fix that broke some people's computers. Sorry about that. So Microsoft immediately stopped the updates, and I think they fixed the fix. The So normally my advice is just do the updates as they come down the pipe from Microsoft. In fact, that was bad advice for some number of people whose computers got messed up by that.
Yeah.
But in most cases, what happened is the computer would reboot spontaneously once in a while, and Microsoft pushed a fix down. So yeah, just keep checking the updates. The good news in all of this is it's a very hard thing to take advantage of. It's unlikely individuals will see what they call an exploit. Much more likely that the people who have to worry about this are people who run servers, web servers, or Azure, Microsoft's Azure or iCloud. Those people are at great risk because you could be a bad guy on, let's say, Amazon's web services, run a bad application that would then see everything that everybody else using that processor is doing, or much of what they were doing. That's really more of a crisis.
You mentioned something about the virus, if you're running an antivirus.
This was another thing. That antiviruses do things they're not supposed to do. Microsoft's been saying for years, please, please, please don't write to the kernel. And they were, and that was breaking it. So Microsoft said, look, antivirus companies, A, you fix this. B, when you do, set a registry key, then we'll get the update. And so you could silently, if you're running an antivirus that wasn't fixed, you would not get offered the update, and there'd be no warning that you weren't patched. If you really want to know the state of your computer, this is a good tip. My friend Steve Gibson wrote a very easy, small tool you can download for free. It's at grc.com /inspector.htm, INSPECTRE. It's a play on words, specter.
So it's
not inspector, but inspector, like the virus, .htm. Or you just Google inspector, INSPECTRE, and you'll find it. And download that. It's 100 kilobytes. It's tiny. It takes a second. In fact, you'll think, did I get it? Because it's so fast, and run it, and it will tell you your exact status. And so I use that just to say, well, how am I doing now? And it'll say green, green, green if you're okay, and it will give you more information. It's also a very good little informational tool.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff.
He's
amazing. We used a tool to quit bugging us about Windows, updating to Windows 10 that he had on his site, and it works.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Although in this case, you want to be bugged.
This
is a good example. Well, you do and you don't. I mean, God. It's hard for me because my standard recommendation is do, update, update, update. And then, but every once in a while, an update will clobber your system. And then the people say, well, Leo. And I say, well, I don't know what to say about that. That's blame Microsoft. They screwed up.
Yeah.
Hey, nice to talk to you.
All right, then.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Thanks a bunch.
Bye-bye. It's not wrong at all. Enjoy it. Enjoy the bump. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That magic music means Scott Wilkinson is here. he makes his entrance, a little dance, makes his entrance on the show. He's our home theater guru, editor of avsforum.com. And it is the Super Bowl weekend.
There it is.
The weekend we wait for all year long. Is this the most viewed TV show of the year?
I don't have the statistics on that. Certainly one of the.
It's one of them. Maybe the Oscars.
The Oscars are kind of going down. I think award shows in general are kind of going down.
Yes, they are, aren't they?
But then again,
but so is the
football.
NFL.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So let's say it's one of the most viewed TV shows.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably still true.
Yeah.
And you know me. I've said this for many years now. I'm not going to be watching the Super Bowl. I'm going to be watching the Puppy Bowl.
Last year's Super Bowl LI was the most viewed TV show of the year. 111 people watched. The funny thing is
111 million.
Million. Yes. I left out kind of a critical word there. A whole 111 people were what? No. That's amazing, though. I mean, given the population of the U.S. is 300 million, that's pretty good. Although, ironically, it's nothing compared to soccer ratings.
That's right.
An everyday soccer game sometimes will get hundreds of millions of viewers.
Yep.
All over the world.
Well, that's because, football, as we call football, is, pretty much US phenomenon.
Yeah.
And what the rest of the world calls football is soccer, and that's the rest of the world.
Oscars were way down. They were less than a third of that. So there you go. There you go. That's for 2017, according to Wikipedia. Now, let me ask you. So you're not going to watch the Super Bowl, but see, there's one thing everybody watches for, and it ain't the football game. It ain't the cheerleaders. It's the advertisements.
That's right. And I am going to be recording the Super Bowl.
So you can watch the ads.
So I can zip through the game and watch the ads.
The complete opposite. Oh, yes. It's Justin Timberlake in the halftime.
Well, that won't be quite so interesting. Now, somebody in the chat room put out a link from TechCrunch that said TiVo is actually doing something special for the Super Bowl.
Oh?
They're marking the game and the commercials opposite the way they normally would.
Yeah, normally on TiVo you skip through the commercials.
Right. In this case, they are marking the game as the commercial.
You press the D button to skip the action. And go right to the commercial.
Exactly. Now you can't do that till after the show. Because they're marking it as they go, so it can't be done in real time. But I thought that was pretty interesting.
I like that feature. I'm sure advertisers hate it, and I'm glad they can't do it on radio. but still, that's funny. Yeah. That's good for you, TiVo. You know what people really want to see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Here was another thing. Dr. Mom, I think, posted this. Amazon is apparently trying to – they've done something to the audio so that during their A-word commercial
– The Echo ads,
the speaking the name that shall not be spoken will not actually activate people's devices.
They did that. They've done that for a while now because it's a real problem. Remember, there was an Xbox commercial where the actor from the young kid from Breaking Bad spoke to his Xbox, and it notoriously everybody who's watching an Xbox, which wasn't a lot of people, it notoriously stopped the ad and switched to a game. So, and then Burger King, remember last year, put an ad on for their Whopper that they threw in the OK Goog word and woke up people's Google Homes and did the ad in effect. They had modified its Wikipedia page. And so the ad continued on your Google Home.
Wow.
So this was clever. Google was a little miffed. So Amazon for some time has been putting, an inaudible tone mixed in with their.
Well, this is what this article says, which I think is very interesting. It said the commercials are intentionally muted in the 3,000 to 6,000 hertz range, which apparently is where.
It's not that they put an extra tone in. They kill the mid-range where the A word lives.
Exactly, where the consonants of the
humans will hear it, just not the device.
Well, this is a question. I'm going to be listening carefully because The Verge incorrectly says the 3,000 hertz to 6,000 hertz range, which is outside the range of regular human hearing. That's incorrect. It's well within the range of human hearing.
Huh.
It is, however, the range of frequencies where the consonants are. Most of the consonants that we use in speech are pretty high frequency or mid-high frequency in that range.
Do you think people with like a superb 5.1 surround sound system are more likely to trigger their Amazon Echoes? Now I'm wondering if the more range you have. They've been doing this for a while because I see Echo ads all the time, and I'm looking back. On the other hand, normal dialogue will randomly trigger my Echo or my Google Home just all the time. You hear bleep.
Will it?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Really?
Bleep.
Oh, okay. Bleep. So it's listening to certain frequency ranges, and maybe that's why. Anyway, I think this is very interesting. I'm going to be listening carefully to that Amazon ad, Echo ad.
To see if you can tell.
Because to see if I can hear it.
Yeah.
Because it's not an ultrasonic tone in there because not all speakers would be able to reproduce it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. But they mask it in effect.
They're muting a certain range, which is right in the speech range.
Yeah.
the Isn't speech intelligibility range, I should say.
So
that's going to be interesting.
I'll have to wear my hearing aids so I can understand the Super, Super Bowl ads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's what I'm going to be doing. Meanwhile, while I'm recording the Super Bowl, I'm going to be watching the Puppy Bowl. Because that one's fun.
I don't even know why you watch that. I tried to watch that. It's just a bunch of dogs running around.
It's super silly. Well, they package it in... You know, this referee going, offsides over there. You shouldn't be
is
doing that.
Is that on the animal? You do this. It's on the Animal Channel, right?
It's on the Animal Planet. Yeah.
You do this. I know why you do this. You don't do it because you love puppies. You're protesting. You're, in effect, taking a knee on the Super Bowl by watching the pupper. I know you. I know what you're up to.
You do know
You're saying, I don't do sport ball. Hand egg. I don't do that.
I have a real ethical and moral problem with football generally.
You see,
because it's inherently dangerous and damaging.
Are people running out to the store today would be the big day, right, to buy a TV just for
it's a little late
is it?
But you no, I mean, there's those sales.
You can't get it delivered
on. No, you can't buy it on Amazon.
You have to go get it. Yeah
exactly. And, you know, you go to Best Buy, you go to Costco, you go to Sam's Club. There are various places that you can go and still have the sales will be on till tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I wrote an article last week about, you know, a lot of TV sales.
AVSForum.com. There are a lot of good deals. But remember, you're buying the 2017 model. It's a chance for these guys to clear out the inventory because the 2018s. When do the 2018s show up?
Generally in the spring to the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when, you know, we'll start seeing them come out in the spring.
Right. So, I mean, generally there isn't a big leap nowadays between the year models, right?
No, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Except when some big major thing comes along, like high dynamic range. When that came along, that was a big deal.
Yeah. Everybody should. If you're going to get a TV, 4K HDR, that's what you want. Scott Wilkinson, you could find out about his favorites, 4K HDRs, and the money you can save, who's having a sale, at his website, avsforum.com. And he joins us each and every week to talk hand egg. I mean, home theater. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Patriots or Beagles?
Patriots or Beagles, yes.
I don't know. Who are you for?
Well, actually, in the Puppy Bowl, it's Team Ruff versus Team Fluff.
All right, I'm going to go make a cup of coffee on that note.
Go make a cup of coffee.
And I'm going to let you take over the stream here.
Thank you so much.
Can you stick around at the top of the hour?
I sure can.
All right, let me give you your special...
Put up my clock and I will
special
definitely
screen.
Keep an eye on it.
The special screen. I know it's here.
Rev Dan Oreo, yes, exactly. Patriots or Beagles,
Yeah.
Yes, Lawn Dog, I do not support traumatic brain injury. That's exactly correct.
It has taken some of the fun out of watching the... I love the NFL, but I have to admit, taken some of the fun out.
See that's
it's easy
thing.
For you to protest because you don't really enjoy it anyway.
I don't. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. It's much harder for a fan.
I'm a huge fan.
Absolutely grant you that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But I hate seeing this happen to these poor guys.
I know.
Well, they're getting paid, but still, it's not right.
Yeah, they're getting well paid, but
still not right.
And it's their choice also. Yeah, I have to say that. Yeah, I acknowledge that. And up until recently, they didn't know what kind of danger it was.
Well, now that's the other thing is the NFL, I think, knew. They didn't want anybody else to know. Yeah.
All right,
all yours.
Okay, thank you. By the way, the movie, Will Smith movie called Concussion, which is about this whole thing, excellent movie. Really, really good. Highly recommended. Will Smith just did a great job. Web 5777, a full analysis of the Puppy Bowl will be expected next Saturday. Yeah, the dogs won. I can tell you that right now. Archandra, yes, I will control the horizontal and the vertical. Ari's on his way to Costco. We'll report back in 45 minutes. Yeah, let's see what you get. That would be great. Mike B. sent me a link. Thank you very much to this 4K set-top box. I want to check out about that for sure. Wait, what was that? I hate when the – here we go. Mike Heiss. Hey, Mike. Monster is spending about $10 million to show a spot with the story of Noel Lee – really? That's going to be one of the commercials in the Super Bowl? Wow. Noel Lee is the founder and head monster, chief monster. I forget. That's actually on his business card of Monster, you know, Monster Cables and stuff like that. Long time fixture in the AV industry. He was actually a guest on my podcast when it was a podcast. So, wow, if that's true, if the Monster has bought an ad for the Super Bowl to show the story of Noel Lee, that would be something. Let's see here. I do remember, Dr. Mom, I do remember the Bud Bowl with the animated beer bottles. We are of an age for sure. Jay, protest soup bowls. No, I love soup bowls, especially bread bowls. Panera Bread with their bread soup in a bread bowl. That's delicious. Yum. Let's see here. Yeah, I got a couple people with me on the football thing. Marsworm, Robert Bigelow. Let's see. Oh, thanks, Mike, man. I want to make sure everybody knows that I've started up a feature on AVS Forum again. It's been about a year, but it's now back in force. And the first one is called The Force Theater. The feature is called Home Theater of the Month. And each month I will be featuring a really cool home theater. Not necessarily really expensive ones. In some cases it will be, but in other cases it won't. So check it out.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I have to look at a list of the Super Bowl commercials. Remember it must have been 10, 15 years ago now. What a big deal it was, the first .com ad on the Super Bowl. What a, like, wow, the internet's really gone mainstream now. Because it was, you know, even then, I'm sure it was $1 million for that ad. Do you remember what the first .com ad on the Super Bowl was? I'm sure there's a way to find that out. If only there were some service in which you could search first .com ad on Super Bowl. I want to think, I think it was like, was it Monster? 1998. Wow. The first .com ad on the Super Bowl. It was Auto Buy Tell.
Yes.
You knew that? I'm impressed. I'm impressed. Auto Buy Tell, in which the protagonist still needed to explain to her cat, okay, Camille, we're on the internet. Then came the internet bust. And it was Auto Buy Tell didn't make any money till 2003. It survived the bust. The Super Bowl became the .com Bowl in the year 2000. $2.1 million for a 30-second ad. And E-Trade, Hot Jobs, K-Force, LifeMinders, Monster.com, RBeginning.com, Pets.com, WebEx.com, and WebMD all bought ads. More than half of those companies, gone. I'll get you the list for this year. Although I have to say, it sounds like it's kind of a jinx. 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. John's next. He's on the line from Bucks County, PA. Hey, John.
How are you, Leo?
It's where my family comes from many moons ago. Bucks County.
I know, and I hear you just interject some Yiddish now and then. So, who knows? There's a possibility I went to Hebrew school with you. Anyway,
oh, how funny. Oh, how funny.
I've got a reincarnation question for
yes,
you.
Yes, sir.
My whole system now, my home network, is all, it's all Apple, but I have a nice 10-year-old Dell desktop that I decided I want to start playing with Linux or Debian, which you've been talking about. However, that computer has some nice hardware I have in it, and over the years I've bought about $3,000 worth of software for it.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, I want to do the following. It's got a 500-gigabyte drive that's got more stuff in it from adding into. I probably have a registry that's bigger than some states.
I guarantee you do, and that can be a problem. That can be a reliability issue.
And even even though I have a registry editor and I've edited it, I'm ready to take a 1 terabyte drive and put it in there. I want to format it I want to partition it, and then I want to format it and put the XP Pro that I own with the original Dell desk on it. Question one, if I do that, will I still be able to get all the updates right through SP3?
Well, as you know, there are no more updates for XP.
I know that, but are the old...
So you're saying you want to install... Yeah, that's a good question. You say you want to install the unupdated... Yeah, because you really do want to... If you're going to be using XP, at least get it to Service Pack 3. I don't know if Microsoft... Let me just see if Microsoft still offers those service packs for download. Yeah, I guess they do. Holy cow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't even look.
They offer them for download. That is... So they're not updating it, but at least, you know, this seems like the right thing to do, right? To offer it at least, well, wait a minute. Oh, this isn't Microsoft. This is Softonic. Oh, dear.
Yeah, who knows? Oh, some guy in Russia that wants my money.
Yeah, let's see. Steps. I do see a Steps Service Pack 3 prerequisite. Yeah, no, Microsoft. Yeah, so that's interesting. So really what you're looking at is getting it from somebody who's archived it, and then you have to decide if that's...
Yeah, it makes me a little nervous, and I'm a legitimate owner. I'm registered. I've got all...
Yeah, you won't... Like just changing the hard drive won't require you know, you should be able to re-enter your serial number. I hope you've saved that.
I have everything.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Now, the chat room is so clever. They seem to have found a link, at least, how to obtain Windows Service Pack 3. Download and install. Nope, sorry, this down... I like the graphic Microsoft's providing. It seems to be a helicopter... I don't know, what is that? Is that a helicopter landing? I don't know what that is, and there's some dots. We're sorry, this download is no longer available.
Oh, that's cute. Let me ask another way. I believe I have on that drive, I saved what it may be a download of the service.
You actually may well have it. Unless you explicitly deleted it, you probably do have it on that 500.
And if I were to have that, could I just start with installing it and then go right to 3? Because I think 3 included 1 and 2, didn't it?
Yes, you go right to 3.
Okay, good. Now, I think I'm ready, almost ready for my last question.
Although, I would still encourage you not to install XP, but go ahead.
Well, I want to have it on there. Like I said, yeah. I've got...
You're going to use Debian most of the time.
Okay, how do I partition that 1 terabyte, and then when do I install the XP?
I'm going to have to think back to those good old days. You know, this is like more, we're back in the Auto Bytel 1998 Super Bowl ad days here.
I got riffed by the .com bubble, so I remember it well.
Oh, who could forget? So, if you install Windows after Debian, it will say no. It'll clobber the boot record, the bootloader. So you install XP. And a new install of Debian is smart enough to say, oh, I see you have Windows on here. Do you want me to share this drive? And it should make what we call a dual boot, which means at startup you'll have a choice between XP or Debian. And most of the time, this is actually probably the right way to do it, because most of the time you'll probably use the more up-to-date, safer Debian with things like the new Chrome or the new Firefox browser. Those are more up-to-date. Neither Chrome nor Firefox is getting updated anymore for XP. But you can always boot into XP if you need to, if you have a program that requires it and so forth.
Well, I can't wait to do that. I'm an old dog that would like to learn new tricks. Last question, if I have one more second. I've noticed when I looked on the motherboard that the power, and I'm trying to look for a diagram, haven't found it yet. One of the places the power goes directly to the only drive that's in there now. By the way, that drive I want to take and turn around and use that for mirror backups that
yes.
I'm going to be making. But I noticed the other spot on the motherboard that I think is for the other drive that I'm going to put in, or the equivalent of it, is connected to one of the two DVD drives I have in the machine.
Right.
And I don't think that's correct, but does it not make a difference?
Well, they're both probably, it depends on the age of the machine, but they're both probably SATA, right? Or are the IDE.
They are.
They're not ribbon cables, they're SATA cables. If they are, then you can get you'll have a certain number of SATA cables on the motherboard, SATA connectors on the motherboard. That's how many drives you can drive.
I got you. Okay, I'm gonna have to check it out more. You've been a great help.
My pleasure.
See you next time in New Hope.
Okay, take care. Beautiful Bucks County, PA. Lawn Dog saying in our chat room, as far as I remember, if you install XP from an install disk, Microsoft updates will work. I don't know. Has anybody done that lately? I think Microsoft took down the XP update installer. Here's another good choice. If you're going to run another operating system like Linux, install VirtualBox, and then you can install XP in a virtual machine. Get to it whenever you need without double booting. Just keep it Linux, and then you can run or use Wine if it's just one or two Windows programs you need to use. A couple of good options. We'll put all of the information in the show notes, including the picture of the helicopter. I still don't understand what that is. Out of time, but we will be back. More of your calls coming up after news at the top of the hour. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bop. Mr. Scott, I'm a tuba, you're a tuba. Wouldn't you like to be a tuba too? Wilkinson.
Yeah, everybody could be a tuba.
Everybody could be a tuba. It's a tuba Super Bowl.
That's right. Unfortunately, the Super Bowl doesn't have the kind of halftime shows I remember.
Who is your favorite?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
Who could forget, of course, Janet Jackson?
Janet Jackson.
Wasn't that
course.
Justin Timberlake?
It was Justin Timberlake.
Removed her. I wonder
yep.
if. I'm surprised.
The wardrobe malfunction.
It took him, 20 years to get him back? But.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I liked that. You know, I mean,
yeah.
What can I say?
Yeah. It was
something.
I think Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney was great.
It was a classic.
Wasn't Lady Gaga on recently?
Gaga was last year. That was amazing.
Yeah.
She leapt into the bleachers.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. I think that was a fun one.
I think that was also when there were a lot of youngsters from YOLA, the Youth Orchestra of Los Angeles.
Yes. That was cool.
Were on stage. That was cool. I thought that was great. I am so enamored of our conductor here in L.A., Gustavo Dudamel of the L.A. Philharmonic, who runs this YOLA program. And he's so committed to music education for children. I just think that's wonderful. Not to mention the fact that he's an amazing conductor.
Yeah.
My family's had season tickets to L.A. Phil for many, many years. My grandfather played in the Phil. And so we've been going.
That's kind of cool. What did he play? The tuba?
Viola? No, he was a viola player.
Nice.
In fact, do you remember the Disney movie Fantasia?
Oh yeah.
Do you remember between
Stokowski? Did he play for Stokowski?
He did not play because that was the Philadelphia Orchestra who you heard.
Okay.
However, you remember in between the segments there were shots of an orchestra in silhouette.
Yes.
That was the L.A. Phil, and my grandfather's in.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Can you identify his particular silhouette?
No. I've tried. I've tried, but I can't. But I do know that he's in there. The orchestra you see on the screen is not the same orchestra that's actually playing the music. That was Philadelphia under Stokowski, and it's wonderful. They're all abridged versions of the pieces, but still, it brought classical music to a much wider audience, and I loved it. I mean, the animation was great. The storytelling was great. Everything about it was wonderful. Anyway, so now we have Gustavo Dudamel, and I just love watching him conduct. He plays the orchestra like an instrument. I mean, all conductors do to one degree or another, but he really does. It's a very deep connection that's obvious and wonderful to see and hear. So anyway, that's
all yours. I'm going to go.
Thank you.
Wander.
Thank you so much. Go wander. Let's see here. There's a bunch of stuff. We've been talking about Panera Bread bowls and football and Home Theater of the Month. Emily DeStrange is encouraging more down-to-earth, more people can afford them type theaters, and I'm certainly going to do that. But I also like sometimes featuring, you know, these amazing, you know, way out of reach for most people theaters. I call them aspirational. It's the same thing as reading a car magazine with Ferrari on the cover, right? I mean, how many of us can afford a Ferrari? Very few. Still, we like reading about them because, you know, maybe someday I'll win the lottery and then I'll buy a Ferrari. Maybe someday I'll win the lottery and then I'll be able to build this amazing home theater. But I do agree that I'm not going to only do those. I'm also going to do very affordable ones, relatively affordable. I mean, if you're going to build a dedicated home theater, and that's what Home Theater of the Month is about, dedicated rooms, a room that is dedicated to being a home theater, to watching movies or TV, but it's not a multi-purpose room. There's not a pool table in there. It's not open to the kitchen, that kind of stuff. It's got to be a dedicated room. And that's going to cost some money. Even if you do all the work yourself, which many of the Home Theater of the Month applicants, and I've gotten now quite a few, many of them have done all the work themselves, down to, you know, the carpentry and the installation of the ductwork for the HVAC system, all that stuff, which is amazing to me. Even so, you're talking, you know, I'd say you probably couldn't get by for less than maybe 10 grand. You know, okay, so that's a chunk of change for most of us. Certainly is for me. So, you know, it's still in all, I think one of the reasons to do Home Theater of the Month is to give people sort of ideas. What can they do, maybe? And they're very interesting. This first one, the guy is a Star Wars nut. And, well, I don't mean that pejoratively. Shall we say, an extreme Star Wars fan. And he made his theater look like the Death Star. It's really amazing. Really amazing. Hey, Loquacious, there you are. I hadn't seen you before. It doesn't mean you weren't there. It just means I didn't see you. Good to see you here. Beatmaster's asking about Samsung acquiring Harman, if it had any impact on the pro brands under the umbrella. And I think that's probably – I don't think they have been yet. And we're talking Revel, Levinson, Lexicon, those kind of brands, JBL Pro. I don't think it's had much impact on those. But it's a good question. Let's see. Web 5777, LA Phil season package definitely beats a Super Bowl ticket. Well, it sure does in my book. Yes, thank you, Lawn Dog. Exactly. Yeah, Mick, I have control of the vertical and the horizontal, but I have not done anything with it. So there you go. Yes, Mike Heiss, win the lottery and get the wall, the Samsung wall. If I won the lottery, I probably would get that. I'd buy a new house and have a dedicated theater. And in that dedicated theater, I would put the wall. In fact, you know what? That's going to be cool. The first home theater of the month that has the wall in it instead of a projector. That's going to be cool. We might see that next year because they say it's good. The wall is going to come out this year. For those who don't know, the wall is basically a direct emission micro LED display, which tiny, tiny, tiny little micro LEDs forming the actual picture. And you assemble tiles together to make a screen of just about any size. And Samsung's first product in this way is going to be a 146-inch 4K display that you bring in the tiles into your room and you install them on the wall and you have the wall. And when a home theater has that, oh, man, that's going to be awesome. So that's I'm looking forward to that. I bet you that's going to happen next year. Mike B., yes, the Altice cable box. I need to look at that because – Is it a cable box? I mean, I don't know of any cable companies that are sending 4K. So we'll see.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the e-tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, 888 888- 877-527-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. But you can still call that number from Skype out and reach us anywhere in the world. And it shouldn't cost you anything since it's a toll-free number. Let's go. You know, I have so many calls. I want to just get back to the phones. I have stuff to talk about, but we can hold on to that. But I don't want to hold on to you guys so long. You've been on a long time. Manny in Vero Beach, very patient. Thank you, Manny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you, Kim, for allowing me to talk to you. That's an awesome woman.
She's the gatekeeper, yes.
Yes, okay. There's two things. First of all, on Nugent, that little annoying little tiny pill thing that shows the time when you talk. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay, when I talk on my phone, I have an LG 5.
Yeah.
And when I'm trying to surf or do anything besides be on the phone part itself.
Something pops up.
Yeah, and it's like shaped like a pill, and it shows a little telephone, and it has a time. And I can't figure out how to get rid of that. You can move it around, but I thought you would know.
Interesting. Yeah, that's something LG must be doing because it's not normal on Android. I think it's an interesting idea, the idea being keep track of how much time you've been on the phone. But you're saying even after you hang up, it's still there.
No, not when you hang up. No, it's just when you're on the phone.
Oh.
Like when I'm on the phone and I'm like Googling something, that little thing's always in the way.
Yeah.
You can move it around, but it don't disappear until you get off the phone.
I would guess that there's something in the settings on the LG. I don't have an LG to look at right now, but I would guess there's something in the settings that lets you turn off the how long I've been talking timer. Mm. I'm just looking through LG's support stuff. I don't see anything talking about it. But for sure, and maybe somebody in the chat room who's listening can help us here, who has an LG phone. I don't happen to have an LG phone to hand. I've had them. I like them a lot. And I've noticed this on other Android phones. My Pixel 2 XL, which is the kind of pure Android phone running, and of course it's not running Nougat. Is it? Yeah, it is running Nougat. No, it's running Oreo. It's running the later operating system. It doesn't do that. I think it'd be kind of handy, I guess. Doesn't make as lot of sense in the U.S. where for almost, as far as I can tell, everybody, unless you have a strange account. Actually, there are some accounts where you might want to monitor the time spent on the phone. But for the most part, you know, you have unlimited phone calls. Marsroom says he has a V30. He doesn't see it on that phone. Maybe it might be something you installed. I don't know. Anybody knows, here's a chance to become a tech support hero. Join Team Tech Guy. Answer this question at 8888-ASK-LEO. Maybe it's an app that comes, if you have a Go phone, a prepaid phone, that comes with it. Maybe the phone company. You know what? That would make sense if the company, your carrier, put it on. That might be it. It might be from the company that provides your service. In which case, ask them how to turn it off. Tony in La Jolla, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tony.
Hello, Leo.
Hello.
Enjoy your show a lot. You do a great job.
Thank you. What can I do for you today?
My wife and I bought a couple Dell desktops for our home office.
Good choice.
Probably 6 years ago, and mine finally died a year ago.
Yeah.
And hers is starting to sound like a gristmill when you turn it on.
That is always a bad sign.
Yeah, so I'm thinking maybe it's time, and we're wondering if we should untether her to a laptop or get another desktop.
Well, the grinding sound is probably the hard drive, so I should tell you, you probably could just put a new hard drive in, and it might end that grinding sound. But if you don't want to do that, yeah, this is a great time to buy a PC. The prices have fallen as low as they'll probably ever go. The power is through the roof. Speed would be much faster than your old desktop. Whether the choice between desktop and laptop is really individual. It's a personal choice. Would she wander around the house with her laptop?
Not so much. I mean, she gets a lot of what she's doing on her phone anyway. So.
Yeah, nowadays that's the true mobile, isn't it? Is your phone?
That's annoying enough to see her with a laptop. And-
Well, then maybe you should get her a desktop. I tell you, I have both laptops and desktops and, of course, tablets and phones. And I find there are times it's really nice to sit at a desk, you know, kind of in an upright posture, looking straight ahead. People often complain of back problems from kind of hunching over a laptop. Unless you need the mobility, I would say stick with a desktop, you know.
And as far as brand?
Dell is still a good brand, but I'll tell you, there's some interesting new or desktops coming out from, for instance, HP. They have something called the HP, I think it's the Elite One, which is an all-in-one. You know, you're familiar with the Apple Macintosh, where it's just the whole computer's in the screen. These are beautiful computers, very powerful. HP's computers are very affordable. And for years, I refused to recommend HP because they put so much junkware on there and their hardware wasn't great. But they have really turned it around in the last year or so. I really feel, especially, you know, they split off into two divisions. The enterprise division went one way, the PC division went the other way. And I think that they took that as a kind of sign. They really needed to up their game, and they have. So that HP Elite One is very nice. Dell still makes great desktop computers, including an all-in-one. The nice thing about all-in-ones is they're attractive. They don't have a lot of wires. They're not an ugly box on the desk. The disadvantage is, of course, if anything goes wrong, the whole thing has to go in. You know,
and probably from a cost standpoint, it's going to be more pricey.
I don't necessarily think that's true, but you should certainly look. Yeah, I guess it would make sense. The uglier a computer is, the less it should cost, right?
Yeah.
You're not paying for design.
She's not doing graphics or gaming or anything. It's mostly email, and she does some spreadsheet and accounting stuff.
Yeah, I think a desktop is actually a good idea, especially if you're doing that, you want a big screen, right? So you're doing spreadsheets, the bigger the screen, the better. So absolutely look at a desktop, at least look at a 27-inch screen for that desktop. And now there are screens, and HP sells one, that are even bigger. They're 34-inch curved screens. That may be overkill. But if she has big, you know, she has spreadsheets and she wants to be side by side with another document as she works back and forth, that is a really efficient way to work. And she'll be very happy. She'll be very happy. Lenovo is another great company, Chinese company, but I think they do good stuff. Lenovo. I'm a ThinkPad fan. That's their business class laptops. But they make some nice, desktops and all-in-ones as well. Dell, HP, Lenovo. Asus, A-S-U-S, very good. Acer, A-C-E-R, tends to be a little lower cost, but I think also makes very good hardware. They're all brands that I pretty continuously recommend and have not been unhappy with. But I would take a look, as long as you're, you know, shopping, go look at those HPs. I think they're beautiful, great screens, high resolution. And if she's doing a lot of spreadsheets, that's going to be a great thing. If you do photography at all, of course, you want to get a high-quality screen because you want it to be accurate. You want to reflect the images you're looking at. Because when you print them, they'll look the same. 8888-ASK Leo. There's one more thing I should mention. You could always get a laptop with an external desktop monitor and keyboard and mouse, which would then allow you to, if you wanted to, get the best of both worlds, a laptop and a desktop. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Coming up, more of your calls. We're going to talk to Steve in Denver. He's got a Nook. Wants to know what to do with it. Stay tuned. Tech Guy Show brought to you. We have our own advertisers because the podcast doesn't include the network ads, the radio ads. We just have a couple of ads for the podcast. And one of them is the fabulous Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. These are great. These guys are great. I have to say, did you use them? No, but you know about them. Yeah. I have to say, they have been very supportive of the network. One of our best advertisers for 2017. I'm glad they're still with us in 2018. And now is the time, as interest rates start to climb. If you've been thinking about locking in a good interest rate with a refi, you better hurry. They say more hikes on the way. Maybe you're looking at a house tomorrow. You're going to an open house, perhaps. Very few people can write a check to buy a house. You've got to get a mortgage, right? Well, Rocket Mortgage is the place to go. From Quicken Loans, best lender in the country, number one in customer satisfaction, year after year for the last 8 years, according to J.D. Power. They realized that the mortgage industry was a little behind. They needed a client-focused technological revolution. They created Rocket Mortgage, the entire thing online. No going to the bank, no going to the attic to get paperwork. You can do it all in minutes. Just answer a few questions at rocketmortgage.com/techguy, and they'll do the rest. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We thank them so much for making the Tech Guy podcasts possible. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. I just got in the mail, unsolicited, which happens once in a while. I generally, when I'm reviewing products, you should know this, I buy them. Because I don't, frankly, I don't want to deal with PR people. If I can avoid that, I will. It's worth money not to have to talk to a PR person. So I buy almost everything I review, all the phones, all the computers, and all that stuff. But every once in a while, somebody just sends me something. This is a, I guess, were we talking on the show last week? I think we might have been, about listening in the shower, listening to a smartphone in the shower. So a company called BasePal sent me a waterproof wireless speaker. You can even take phone calls in the shower, which is a little weird. But then now, so comes in over the transom. I don't know them. They didn't ask, they didn't call. They just sent it to me. Probably fine. But then somebody in the chat room says, oh, don't plug that into your USB port. It could be malware. It could be. It could be. You know that, right? If you found a USB key on the ground, just sitting there, don't pick that up and put that in your computer. It's completely capable of hacking your system automatically just by inserting it because of autoplay, right? Even if you have autoplay turned off, it's not a good, it's bad hygiene. But this, I'm not going to plug this into a computer to charge it, though. I think it's safe. I'm sure it's safe. But I think if I wasn't sure, I'm not plugging it into a computer. I'm plugging it into just a USB charger. And that would be harmless. I'll give you a review. I'll call you from the shower. Actually, it is plugged into the computer. John says, it's plugged, that USB thing's plugged in the computer. Ah, that's fine. Nothing happened. Yet. You guys, you've been listening to this show too long. You're paranoid. You're scaring me now. I scared me scaring you. Steve, Denver, Colorado, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo, how's it going? Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for hanging on.
I've been following you since the Tech TV days. I came and saw you down there one time and won my first webcam when I was there, so thank you for that.
We had to give away webcams. We gave away the 3Com, right? Netcam from 3Com.
Oh, I can tell you now.
Yeah, right. Because we wanted to get video calls. This was back in the late 90s, early 2000s. We wanted to get video calls on the TV show. And they called them webcams back then. And I said, don't call it a webcam. It's not on the web. It's a netcam. It's a network. And so we made sure it was the ZDTV Netcam Network, we called it. And the only way we get callers is to give them, we gave away thousands of those. Anyway, I'm glad you won one. I'm sorry you don't still use it, because I could see you. I could see you now.
Right.
In a blurry, tiny, tiny 240 by 320 picture.
Uh-huh, for sure.
What can I do for you, sir?
Okay, well, I'll use the term gifted loosely, a Nook HD.
Somebody didn't like you, huh?
Right. Which it seemed like it would have the capabilities to allowing me access to my digital movie library.
Yes.
When you look at the options within the Nook, it looks like at least they used to support ultraviolet. And then there also was something called Nook Video, which also allowed you access to your ultraviolet library.
So I should explain, the Nook was a Amazon Kindle competitor that Barnes & Noble came up with that didn't really take off. The first ones were e-ink. But then they eventually put out tablets, which you have. It's a 7-inch tablet. Doesn't have a lot of storage. Right. I'm not sure if you have the 8 or the 16 gigabyte. But you might be able to get one movie on there. Have you put stuff on there? It's Android 4. It's really old Android.
Yeah, well, actually, not on this version of the Nook. I haven't been able to get any movies on it.
Okay.
I mean, I just want to stream them.
Right.
From like a service like Vudu or something like that.
Right. Well, you should. Have you been able to install Netflix or Vudu? I mean, you got the Google Play Store on there, right?
Right, yeah, correct. And when you go to the store, it says this
not compatible.
Device is not compatible.
Yeah. Right?
So I called Barnes & Noble, and they said, oh, well, we only offer compatibility with a service called Cinema Now,
which okay.
That service is defunct, apparently, when I went to there.
I remember Cinema Now. Yeah, it was like Vudu. It was
right,
the same idea. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'm kind of stuck now. I that was their advice, and that led me nowhere. So,
well, here's the
thing. I
didn't
know if you had an idea.
Yeah, I have an idea. I bet you can hack the Nook. You don't mind hacking it at this point, do you?
No, yeah.
This would be fun. This is a great project. Hey, worst case, you're out one Nook. But I don't think you're going to be out of Nook. What we need to do is go to a website that will help you hack it.
Okay.
Called XDA Developers, xda-developers.com. This is a forum of Android buffs, of aficionados. And the number one thing they do there is take older Android devices like yours and figure out how to put newer versions of Android on there. In effect, treating it as a computer that you put your own operating system on. And if you were able to get a more modern version of Android that wasn't Barnes & Noble limited, you might well be able to use other Android apps. It would no longer say incompatible. Now, you should remember that probably part of the incompatibility is just that it's a slow processor and not a lot of RAM.
Okay.
But you certainly can hack it, unless Barnes & Noble has taken extreme steps to prevent that.
Okay.
Remember, the real problem in all of this is copy protection. Netflix doesn't want to be on devices that can't protect the movies. The movie companies don't like that.
Okay.
And Barnes & Noble, even ebooks were copy protected. And Barnes & Noble made sure that thing supported copy protection. And so that's really probably the biggest problem in here. That's why they only supported Cinema Now. Copy protection is the bane of technology. It's antithetical to users. It's user hostile. It just assumes everybody's a thief, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and we're not going to let you do anything because, well, you might be a thief. And all it does, in my opinion, is teach people how to be thieves. Because what's the first thing you want to do? Well, let's see if we can crack this thing open so I can do what I want to do with it.
Right, I just want access to my content that I've got. So,
There is a CyanoBoot. Missing has just sent me the link from XDA Developers for the Nook, which is a alternative bootloader for the Nook, which then means you can put other operating systems on there.
Great.
It's going to be fun. You're going to need a PC. You're going to need to hook it up by a USB cable. You're going to become a hacker. And now Barnes & Noble's done it again. They've created more hackers. I think this is actually one of the fun things to do with old Android devices. XDA-developers.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, boy. Did you know that you can now listen to the Twit Flash briefing in more countries than ever before? I think for podcasters, I am so excited about the Amazon Echo, the Google Home, to a lesser degree, the Home Hub, Home Pod, when that comes out. In a week, we'll have one. I'll give you a review. That's Apple's device. Actually, that's all three of them will let you, with voice, listen to our shows. With no additional setup. So you'll be able to tell the HomePod, hey, Siri, listen to the Tech Guy. And it'll play the most recent episode of the show. Any podcast that's in the iTunes directory, which, of course, is all of ours and many hundreds and thousands of others. Same thing with the Amazon Echo and Google Home. Echo uses TuneIn as their directory. Google probably uses Google Play Music, I would guess, as its directory. So we're in all of those. So You can always, I think this is kind of for podcasting a very important moment, because suddenly it's actually as easy, in fact, maybe a little easier to listen to a podcast in your house than it is the radio, right? You just say, hey, listen to the tech guy, and it's playing. I expect us to see a big growth in Echo numbers. And now you can do the flash briefing on your Amazon Echo. We've just added Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom, and India. So if you are in one of those countries, you probably don't know, or maybe haven't tried the flash briefing, which is you say, okay, Echo. You can even just say, listen to my news, or good morning. There's a lot of different ways to launch it, or play my flash briefing. And you can, in the Echo app, say what things you want in your flash briefing, what news sources. One of them is Twit. And what we do is we take little segments of every show and we put that in the flash briefing. So it's a great way to get a short hit of Twit every morning as your tech news. We invite you to add it. Just go to the Amazon Echo app, and under flash briefing, search for TWIT, and you can get all of our shows. We have little, and they're short, they're 2-minute little snippets of our shows. So there's a little plug for that. And maybe if you haven't tried it, if you have one of these voice-activated devices, figure out how you can listen to our podcast. It's almost always, sometimes it's weird name-wise. Like the New York Times, when they named their podcast The Daily, probably should have thought harder about that, because it's like when you ask the Echo for The Daily, it plays you like the daily news or something. You have to say daily podcast. So you may, in some cases, that may be true for us as well. But in general, I think all of these devices, if you ask, you say, listen to This Week in Tech or listen to The Tech Guy, it will play the most recent episode of any of those. So, you know, we have a podcast of this show. If you missed the show, if you're listening to this, you know this because I'm telling the podcast audience. But but for future reference, you know, if you're listening to this on your phone in the car or whatever, you can also use your Amazon Echo or your Google Home or once you get that HomePod, the Apple HomePod. I think this is really awesome. Sometimes you have to say, if you want to listen to the live stream, for instance, on the Echo, you say, listen to Twit Live on TuneIn. If you have a Google Home device, you can say, watch Twit Live on YouTube, and it'll put it up on your TV if you have a Chromecast. So it's a little effort, but once you get it, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool way to listen to the shows. I think it's going to be big for podcasting in general. And that's probably how I will be listening to this show in the shower. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. And if you're listening in the car and you're saying, let me write that down. You don't have to write anything down. We put it all on the website, and this is free. There's no charge. There's no sign up. You can just use a browser and go to techguylabs.com. And the website's divided up into every show. Each show has its own page. This is episode 1459. And so you go to that episode. I think you could go by day as well, February 3rd. You go right to that day. Then you can see it broken down into hour 1, 2, and 3. And you can even see the hours broken down into calls and segments. So, and then we've got somebody, James DeRuvo. Hi, James, writing this all down. And so he puts the question and my answer in text, but you can also, a little later after the show, Josh Windisch in our office will add the audio and the video to the website so you can actually listen to the call, listen to my answer. You can also comment. So all the links, everything you might want to write down, it's all there and a lot more at techguylabs.com. There's a good search as well. So even if you're, you know, not thinking of a specific show, but you just want to know, hey, did Leo mention a waterproof shower speaker? What was the name of that? You could search it, and it would be there in the show notes. TechGuyLabs.com. No charge. No charge. Thanks to our great sponsors, we don't have to charge you for that. Gary is on the line from Castaic, California. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I have a Windows 7 installation. It's a professional version, and I am getting a blue screen of death. It's a 7B, And I have done all kinds of things trying to fix it so that I can boot up into it. And I have not been successful.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if there's something that I have missed.
Did you did this start recently?
No.
Okay.
It started actually a year ago.
Oh.
And I've been working on it since then.
Oh my. And have you ever been able to get it to boot or not at all?
Not at all.
Okay.
I can't go into normal mode. I can't go into safe mode.
Oh, you can't even start up in safe mode.
No.
Ah, yeah. That's probably the hard drive.
I have tested the hard drive with many different programs. I have run check disks. I've run...
Where in the startup process do you get the blue screen?
Right at the very beginning.
Yeah. See, a check disk isn't going to help you because if... It may not be a bad sector. It may not be something that can't be read. It may merely mean that one of the little, you know, one bit flip in a crucial boot sector will cause this. One bit out of billions will cause this.
I'm sorry for interrupting.
Go ahead.
Originally, the boot sector was on the same partition as Windows 7. One of the things that I have tried is to create a 100-megabyte partition and make that active.
So you try to reinstall Windows on this. Have you?
I have reinstalled Windows 7 in another partition on the same hard drive.
And does that start up?
Yes, yeah. That starts up just fine.
So that's a very good diagnostic to prove my contention. That's what's wrong is the boot sector or some... May not be the boot sector. It could be, you know, a startup process starts on the boot sector, which then says, right. Oh, okay, now you got to load the operating system. Go get that kernel 32 DLL you see over there. It starts to load. And as things are loading in, any one of them could have a bad bit in a bad spot. Your hard drive is kind of like the globe, right? Mostly ocean. Satellite, you know, comes burning down from the sky. Chances are it's going to hit the ocean. But sometimes an error hits something important. And this case, sounds like you got an error in a critical part of the boot process, but you don't know where. You haven't reinstalled Windows on that partition because you don't want to lose the data. Is that right?
That is correct. I have lots and lots of programs.
So in your programs are another matter. So you don't want to reinstall those programs. It's not documents particularly. Although
I can always copy off the documents.
Got it. That's easy. That's what I was going to say. It's you don't want to reinstall those programs.
Right.
Well, there is, of course, a full reinstall, which would probably fix this, will force you to reinstall applications. You might be able to do a repair. Have you tried a repair?
In order to do a repair, you have to boot up into the operating system, which I can't do.
Well, but you can do it from a repair disk or any Windows 7 install disk. So what you need to do is download and make a boot disk of Windows 7.
And I have that.
Okay, and when you go into the install, there'll be a point you have to watch carefully where you can hit R, or it might be Control R, to repair. And what that does is it goes through the system, looks for damaged files like maybe one of these critical system boot files, and replaces them as needed. It may not fix this, but it's certainly the next thing to try.
I have done that many times. I've used EasyRE to repair it. I've used I have my own batch file that repairs the boot files.
We know the machine's all right because that second 100-gigabyte install of Windows works fine.
Yeah.
It's okay. So we know the machine's just fine. What you can't get into is that particular partition that has all the apps you want to install. And so this is a tricky thing, but, I mean, if you can figure out what's damaged, you can fix it.
Right. I was wondering if there's a possibility that the boot files are now set up to boot as a BIOS with an MBR, I'm wondering if it needs to be changed to an EFI.
Well, wait a minute. It's been booting on that machine all along, right? Up until it stopped?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, nothing's changed there. You can, if you have an EFI BIOS, that's the new way of doing things, the extensible firmware interface. If you have an EFI BIOS, you can go into your BIOS. You could try it. I don't think it'll help, but you can try it. You can go into your BIOS and put it in what they call legacy mode. Legacy mode pretends it's a BIOS, basic input-output system, instead of EFI.
Right.
And so if you go into legacy, you can see how I slipped into it. I said go into BIOS. It isn't going into BIOS anymore. It's going into setup. It's the same thing. You go into your system setup, and you can say turn off secure boot, turn on legacy boot, and that will emulate a legacy boot. And if that's the problem, which I doubt it is, but if it is, it's certainly worth a try. It's an easy thing to try. It'll boot up.
I have tried that. And it doesn't boot up.
Yeah, so that's not the error then. That's not the issue. It's almost certainly there's a bad file that's booting. And it can happen, it doesn't have to be check disk and spin right and all the other file checking, hard drive checking programs. All they do is they look at this underlying sector and say, can I read and write to it? Yes. Okay, I'm fine. Is the directory working? Is it pointing to the right sectors? Okay, I'm fine. What it won't tell you is this system file, let's say for example, kernel32.dll is munged, is messed up. There's a bit flipped. It won't tell you that. It doesn't know that. You might say, well, how'd the bit flip? Literally, it could happen from cosmic rays striking the disk. That can literally happen. So all you can do, it sounds like you've done everything. You've been working on this for a year, is try to figure out what's messed up. I'll give you a couple of tips in the break. Hold on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Can you get into the, you said you can't do safe mode. Can you get into command line?
Yes, I can.
Okay. And you've tried SFC, the system file checker, in the command line?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
And it didn't find any problems.
I'm not completely clear, and I don't think Microsoft tells you how sophisticated SFC is. I've always assumed, well, it's going to look at a hash of all the system files, and if they don't match the official hash, it'll replace them. But and by the way, if that were what it's doing, it would detect this issue. But
yes.
It sounds like if it's not detecting that, I'm only assuming that that's the intelligent way to run a system file checker. God only knows what Microsoft does. It might say, well, it's the right number of bytes. I mean, they don't document it that thoroughly.
I think what it actually does is it checks the live files in Windows System 32.
Right, it's comparing them.
With the cache that's on the machine.
The question is how it's comparing them. Is it comparing them in a way that would, like an MD5 hash, where you would definitely know the difference? Even if one bit was flipped, or if it's doing something dumber. And I don't really know. Maybe you know. So I don't know.
I have changed the kernel32.dll. Mm-hmm. I would love to find a list of files that it requires during startup so I can change them all directly.
Here's another thing before you do that, which is to turn on the boot log. So in that startup menu, you can have a logged boot, what it does is it makes a text file, bootlog.txt, in the root directory as it's booting. And it will say, okay, loaded this, okay, loaded that, okay, loaded this. Have you done that?
I have tried that. And this happens before the boot log.
Oh, crud. Yeah, it has to have a certain amount of stuff going before that works.
Exactly.
Usually boot log is helpful only if the drivers are crashing. So now we know it's not drivers. It really is the kernel. It's the deep operating system. It's probably not even accessing. If it can't write to a text file. Yeah, I don't really have you've done everything right.
I've also tried, there's a program that I'm sure you're familiar with. It's called Macronium Reflect.
Yeah, Macronium's great, yeah. And Macrium, I should say, yeah.
Macrium, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And the purchased version has a an option under Restore to make it so that you can remove all the current drivers and put it on a new system.
Yeah, and what happened then?
And unfortunately, that program fails. I'm going to get a hold of their tech support and see if I can work with them to get it to work.
So you can try fixing the master boot record with BootRec. See if that fixes it.
I
don't think. I think it's past the master boot record. I don't have any evidence of that, but I think it's probably past it. The real issue for you, I understand, is that you want to get these apps off of here. This brain surgery. I guess you could copy. You'd have to. Each app installs stuff all over the hard drive. That's the problem, and you don't know where it's living. Why don't you visit our chat room, see if they've got any solutions? I'm looking at them. irc.twit.tv. I am out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, spent a little more time with our previous caller. Poor guy. Gary's been knocking on this machine for a year, and it's really a simple thing. He's got the documents. He's just trying to figure out how to get Windows back up and running because he's got, and this is the problem with Windows and the way it installs applications. He's got a bunch of applications. He either doesn't have the, you know, the system disks for, doesn't have the serial numbers for, and he can't reinstall them. I mean, the easiest way to fix this, he's already got the data off, is just to either buy a new drive or wipe this drive and reinstall Windows, right? And then reinstall all your apps. Nowadays, it's easier than it used to be. I have to say, we've come so far in computing. Used to be, I have to tell people, all right, now go in the closet, see if you can find the floppy disks that came with your copy of Quattro Pro 6, because you're going to need to reinstall them. And, of course, in the box with the floppy disk was a serial number you'd need to reinstall it. Nowadays, almost everything we do, including Office, we download. And often, the way you, for instance, validate Office is you log into your account. Your Office 365 account. Microsoft says, oh, yeah, you can install another copy, and you're done. Or you have a serial number that you, if you bought software online, you download it. You know, Adobe is a good one. You download it. Actually, in Adobe's case, you don't even need a serial number for that. You just log into your Adobe account. Yep, that's it. Validated. A lot of software, they send you a serial number, and then you download the software, you run it, it's running in trial mode, and then it says if you want to run in full mode, you need to purchase it or enter your registration key, and then you paste it in. So this has become, really, this problem has become a thing of the past. Used to be, we'd tell people, now you got to go and get an uninstaller. There are a lot of, what was it, like Clean My PC? Remember these old programs? There were uninstallers, and they would bundle up all the bits and pieces of the program so you could, you know, into a suitcase so you could move them to another drive. They never worked all that well, and the reason is Windows software installs all over the place. There's an .exe file in a folder somewhere, but there are libraries that the .exe file uses. They're called DLLs, Dynamic Linked Libraries. Those might be in all kinds of locations, including Windows' own official directories. They may have modified the registry with all sorts of stuff. You got to find all that stuff, figure out what it is, save it, and then when you move to the new machine, put it all back in the right place. It's almost impossible. It can be done. I'm not, to be honest, I'm not sure why Gary needs to do that. Maybe he, I don't know where he got the software. Maybe he doesn't have a serial number for some reason. Maybe it's old software. I don't know. Maybe they don't download. You can't for download anymore. I would suggest that the right thing to do at this point is just start over. Macrium Reflect, BC tells me, has a fix Windows boot problems option in the restore menu of the Windows PE recovery environment. Thank you. Maybe you can figure it out. Maybe you can figure it out. There's a term for programs that don't spew stuff all over Windows. They're called portable programs. They can be run from a single EXE file. That means you can put them on a USB key, plug it in, and just double-click the file, and it'll run. Why aren't more programs like that? Why don't you... You don't need to save, I guess ostensibly to save disk size, right? Well, we'll use shared libraries in the home directory or something like that. No, because you end up messing up Windows because you got 15 different C libraries in there, all incompatible. We call it DLL hell. Literally, there's a term for it. It's a good argument against pirating software. Not saying that he's doing that, but that's a good argument against pirating software. And it's a good argument against getting up to date, in favor of getting up to date software where you just download it and either log into your account with that company or paste in the serial number. And then store the serial number somewhere reliable. I use LastPass, but Evernote would work anywhere that has a cloud storage functionality so that you're backing up the serial numbers automatically. That's the way to do it. 8888 Ask Leo. If you got a suggestion, if you got a question, if you got a comment, I'm here for you. Give me a ring. We'll talk. Steve in Missouri, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Thanks for hanging on.
I've been following you since your days with Soledad O'Brien.
Oh, my gosh. Good old Soledad. That was on MSNBC when they first launched in 96.
Yep.
Oh, back in the last century.
Yeah, back in them days.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't any.
There practically was. I don't think there was an internet. There barely was.
It was just maybe. I don't know. I think I had. I don't know if I still had my PC Junior then or not.
Wow. Yeah. Those are the days. Well, what can I do for you in the modern times?
Well, I've got an LG Stylo 2. I'm on Straight Talk.
Okay.
And this, I'm a truck driver. That's why I'm here in Missouri now, coming into St. Louis.
Nice.
And
I'm going to guess. You're on a blue parrot, aren't you?
Yep.
I can always tell. These are the amazing headsets that a lot of truckers use. They're Bluetooth headsets. They're dead quiet. You cannot hear the truck.
Oh, yeah. I can roll down the window, and you probably don't know that I've got the window all the way down.
If you hadn't told me you were in a truck, I wouldn't have known. It's dead quiet. They have the best noise cancellation. I can always tell a blue parrot.
And the advantage to me is, from my Navy days on aircraft carriers and my damaged hearing.
Oh boy!
Headsets that I can actually hear people talking on.
You weren't standing on the deck, were you?
Oh yeah.
Oh boy!
Best job I ever had in my life.
A lot of fun, but yeah, every one of you lost hearing, right?
Oh yeah, you couldn't do it. The A6 Intruder and the F-14 on afterburners were so loud.
Oh.
You had to squeeze your headphones against your head to try to. That's the sound, and the A6 was rattled so hard, bring your teeth because it felt like you were going to lose out of your jaw.
I mean, it was kind of thrilling, though, right?
Oh yeah, you get paid to be a thrill seeker.
Yeah, it's fun. So you lost GPS in your Stylo. Is that what you're saying?
It's what's happening is I'm using straight. We lost satellite radio, so I use
sure.
I use the what is this that I'm listening to you on now?
Yeah, the Bluetooth, and you're streaming it to your radio. Yeah.
Yeah,
or your speakers. Yeah.
I have iHeartRadio running constantly.
Nice.
All day.
Good man.
And I'm using Google Maps so that I can get to my customers.
That phone is the trucker's dream.
Oh, it is. And then we just added, now we're mandated by law to have the electronic logging devices.
Right.
So my book is now on the phone. So with these three things running constantly, I don't know if that's what's causing it.
Well, hang on. I got to take a break. Let's keep talking, though. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. And we'll have more of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, hour 3, just around the corner. Sorry about that. I had the magic sounder took me off.
Yeah.
I can't believe how quiet this is.
Oh, I love this headset.
So you're actually driving right now?
Right now, I'm on Interstate 70 at mile marker 217, approaching O'Fallon, Missouri.
I hear nothing.
Well, this truck is relatively quiet. It's a brand new Freightliner,
nice.
But it's not quite as the Volvo I just got out of. But like I said, this headset is great. The window is all the way down. You probably can't hear it.
I can't hear a thing. I hear your voice and nothing else. It's amazing. Yeah. I actually bought one. I use it at home. I love it so much.
The downside of, this, and I don't know if it's the phone or if it's the headset, but if anybody is talking, they can't hear me. I can't interrupt anybody when they're talking.
Yeah, yeah, and that's how it does it, by the way. It's called, it's noise gating. And so it's, that is a downside, but that's how it does it, basically.
So it's the noise canceling that causes that.
You bet.
Oh, okay, because every time my wife's talking, I try to interrupt her and I can't.
Okay, that's a serious downside.
Yeah.
But it makes you more polite.
Yes, yes.
So the Bluetooth works with the Blue Parrot.
Yes, and it's and like I said, we also have Bluetooth hooked up to our electronic logging device, the ELD that they just
and that's still working.
Well, here's the thing, and this is what's been happening pretty much since we installed this ELD device. Occasionally, I lose both the ELD and the headset.
Okay, so all Bluetooth goes out then.
Yeah, all Bluetooth goes out and it comes back. But the GPS thing is it's hard for this thing to maintain a lock on GPS. And it's really bad. I was in Boston. I had to go to Harvard. I had to make a delivery to Harvard. And Boston. I don't know if you've ever been to Boston. It's not made for big.
Oh, it's insane. I can't imagine driving a Freightliner in Boston. That would mean you're nuts.
I went around the corner people to come out of their building to move their cars.
Yeah. You kick it down the streets, and they're all one way in different directions. So let me ask you this. Do you think you lose the GPS, or do you think you lose the map?
I'm losing it. It'll announce that lost GPS.
Lost GPS. Okay, that's important. So that means you're not losing carrier data. It's not that LTE is failing. It's that the GPS radio is failing. By the way, that is the same radio in most cases, the same chip, I mean, as the Bluetooth. It's all one Qualcomm chip. It's a couple of possibilities. It could be the signal's weak. Remember, GPS needs to see the sky, so you probably keep the phone, though, in view of the front window, right, the windshield?
That's up there. So I've got it attached to the window.
Yep. So it's seeing the sky. So it's a weak antenna, in other words. It could be a failing antenna or a failing chip. Coming and going like that.
Could I be breaking it out by running this iHeartRadio all day long?
No. Well, I mean, probably not. It is conceivable. You know, why does a chip die? Well, heat's one problem.
Right.
And if it's in the window and it's getting direct sun and it's heating up, it could be that. Do you have it near the air conditioner vent?
There is a vent that comes out. I tried to get it so that it doesn't have direct contact with this vent, but there's a vent on the edge.
You want to keep it cool, and being in the sun can be a problem too. But generally, if you are getting overheating, the phone itself will stop. It'll say, "I'm hot. I'm not going to continue." It's going to protect all the chips, not just that chip.
Okay. Now, here's one thing I'm doing that's probably not a good idea. I think I heard you talk about this a couple of weeks ago. Rather than plug it in, plug it out, plug it in, plug it out, I leave it plugged into power.
Nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. That's how I would do it. Yeah, Steve Gibson has this notion. He's one of our show hosts that he can baby his phone. you can't baby it. Just leave it plugged in. No, that's not a problem. It's not the top of the line phone, the Stylo.
Yeah, I don't know how much I can afford, but it's about almost 2 years old.
It might just be time for a new phone. I think that's frankly my expectation is just the phone's worn out.
Thank you. That's time to get a new phone. Can I ask you a real quick question?
Sure.
We're losing connectivity in the house when I get home at rare time to our Wi-Fi within the house.
Yes.
When we first got the cable modem, no problem.
Yes.
But lately, we can't get. I'm upstairs. I can't talk to the Wi-Fi downstairs. The computer's in the basement of my son's man cave. I bought a repeater, but that doesn't help.
Yeah. So do you notice a lot of other signals in your neck of the woods?
Well, I'm in flyover Nebraska. There might be. Everybody's on cable modem. So there might be. We're kind of in the middle of a neighborhood there.
Yeah, it could be. Sometimes, I mean, the real problem with Wi-Fi in general is that we're using more and more Wi-Fi devices.
Right.
So there are many, many devices connected, and the neighbors are, and they have big, powerful antennas, and sometimes it can confuse a device. It can also bring the network down. I recently had a problem, and I could not diagnose it, where the Wi-Fi dropping out for seconds once or twice a day. That I traced back to a Google Home device. I actually unplugged all of my Google Home and Chromecast devices, and it's gone away. They were spamming the network and bringing the Wi-Fi down periodically. So this is the problem. It's hard to diagnose. My guess is if the router is in the basement with your son, it's a weak signal. What you want to look at, and again, these are expensive, is these new mesh solutions, much better than a repeater. The mesh solutions are kind of work like a repeater, but they allow you to spread the Wi-Fi without slowing it down. A repeater cuts the Wi-Fi speed in half. And generally, they solve these connectivity problems. There's a number of them. The one I use is Eero. They're a sponsor. But another one that might work really well for you is called Plume, P-L-U-M-E. But the problem with the Plume is they're less expensive. I think they're $79 in bulk per Plume. But you need one per room. But I know. But they do really well because they basically cast a small pool of Wi-Fi. And so it's less interfered with and it works better in some situations. Everybody makes these mesh solutions now. TP-Link makes a very affordable one. That's probably the least.
Does Netgear make one? Because that's our router.
Netgear also makes one, the Orbi, which I really like a lot. But they're like $300. They're very expensive.
Oh, wow.
I know. Take a look at the TP-Link Deco, D-E-C-O. They just announced that. It's fairly inexpensive. They're a good company.
Now, what about this thing? I think I heard you mention it. Was it last week or week before? Something about looking for a clear channel?
This is a black diamond tip, but you can run a Wi-Fi analyzer like Insider on Windows or Wi-Fi analyzer on Mac or on an Android phone. There's a Wi-Fi analyzer, and you can look at what bands. There's three bands. There's 2.4 gigahertz and two bands in the 5 gigahertz, and then within the bands there are three channels per band: 1, 6, and 11. And then they're the side channels. And you can see which ones are congested. And it may be sufficient just to say, well, I'm going to choose channel 6 on 5 gigahertz because no one else is using that. Sometimes that helps. But it's not every device will let you choose the band. And it's a moving target, unfortunately, because the bands often change. This is basically what a mesh router does. That's the secret sauce of a mesh router. Is it's watching traffic, watching what needs more traffic, what needs less, and it's constantly modifying the frequencies. I would look at TP-Link, and you can also look at Powerline Networking. As long as you're looking at TP-Link, they have very good Powerline solutions. You can just run upstairs without wires. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 888-888. Ask Leo. That is my phone number. I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach me. Oh, yes, you can. Just use Skype to call. And we talk about anything with a chip in it. Computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, smart watches. We're going to see a new Samsung Galaxy S9 at the end of this month. The Mobile World Congress is the big event where a lot of phone companies announce new phones, but this is the one everybody's interested in. I think the Samsung is number two right after Apple, and worldwide it might be number one. It's certainly the most popular Android manufacturer, and they make high-end phones, but they also make less expensive low-end phones, but it's the high-end everybody pays attention to, the flagship they call them. And the S9 and the Note 8, well, actually, it's the S8 currently and the Note 8 are the current flagships. The Note is the slightly bigger phone, although that distinction is disappearing, isn't it, as the S series gets bigger and bigger. Really, now the only thing the Note has, the only real advantage the Note has, it has a stylus built in. So if you need a stylus, you'd get a Note. Note 8 came out a few months ago. We won't see a new Note 8 till this fall. But they're in a stagger step, so the S9 will be announced. We expect it to be more expensive this time around, $850. It won't look a lot, according to the rumor mill, and again, we won't know for sure, as usual, until the end of the month. But according to the rumor mill, it will look a lot like the S8. In fact, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of reason to get an S9, you know, unless you're in the market for a new phone anyway. Sounds like it'll have dual cameras, which the S8 didn't have. That's the right now. We're at a point now where these phones are pretty good. It's hard to make them better, I guess. All technologies reach that point. They call it peak, as in we're in peak smartphone. You can only get little bits of improvements at this point. Maybe a little faster, maybe a little bit better screen, although at this point, there's no point in adding dots to the screen. There are already more dots than they need. Screen resolution is not an issue. I think this is going to be, it's rapidly becoming the time where you sit on a phone for a few years and you only get a new phone because the old one's worn out, not because the technology's advanced particularly. S8 was an amazing phone. Great camera, best screen out there. No reason to get a new S9. I am interested in the next generation Samsung phone. Probably not till 2019. Samsung's been, for a long time now, more than a year, saying we want to make a phone with a flexible screen that can open up like a notebook. So we've seen mock-ups of phones that look like a regular phone, you know, with a single monolithic screen on the front, but that open up into what is more like a 7-inch or 8-inch tablet. I love this idea. Microsoft's been long rumored to do something like this. There was a sketch of something called the Courier for a long time, which people thought was going to be the next Microsoft phone. They never did that one, but now there's a Project Andromeda bruited about, which is, again, another, you open it up, kind of phone/tablet. We'll see. It's always interesting. There's always something new. But at this point, it's fins on a Cadillac. The car companies had this problem, right? In the 50s and 60s, they couldn't put more horsepower in the thing. The steering wheel's not going to get any fancier. They're making minor improvements. And basically, the way they can get you to buy a new car is by making the old one look old-fashioned. So they put fins on it. Well, now you have to have the new car. It's got fins. And I think that's the analogy I use. That's what's going on in the phone industry. We've got to put fins on the phone. Something you can visibly see the difference. Two cameras on the back. Not just one, two. That's got to be twice as good, right? Actually, the best camera phone right now has one. It's the Google Pixel 2 XL or Pixel 2. It has one lens, and it does as good as any two lens as well. I should correct. Sorry, Mrs. Kelly, my grammar teacher. It does as well as a two-lens phone. You really can't. In fact, it does better because it's all in the software these days anyway. All right. Let's see. Oh, there's one phone that you won't be able to get. Chinese phone. A Chinese company called Huawei. Is very popular in China. I think they're the number two or three phone seller in China, which means that they sell a lot of phones. And the Huawei Mate 10, is that it? Was slated to be sold in the U.S. for the first time ever. They were going to start selling Huawei phones. By the way, no one knows how to pronounce it. Huawei. Huawei. All excited about selling this phone in the United States. They had a deal with Verizon and AT&T, and then along comes Congress, or maybe it was the Department of Commerce. The U.S. government says, hey, that Huawei, they're partly owned by the Chinese military. I don't know if we trust them. Maybe you shouldn't. And both Verizon and AT&T canceled their contracts because we don't just trust China. I mean, every phone you buy is probably, most every phone, certainly all the iPhones are made in China. But this is different. This is a Chinese company, which I guess the theory is they could stick some sort of spyware in there. I don't think they'd get away with it. There's a company, a Chinese company called Oppo. that makes the OnePlus. And the OnePlus has, for the last couple of generations, it contains software that phones home about your phone and what you're doing with it. Probably not, you know, the Chinese government spying. Probably simple economic espionage. But people found out. They were mad. It's hurt the company. I think if Huawei were doing that with the Mate 10, we'd know. But you're not going to be able to buy it from a carrier. And Huawei's hopping mad. Hopping mad about that. Actually, I'm probably still going to get one and look at it because it's got a Leica camera. Leica's the German camera company that's notorious for making amazing products built into it. Double lens. Of course, it has two lenses. Of course it does. Still has a physical home button. And, you know, most importantly, doesn't have. Does it have? Doesn't have. No headphone jack. For crying out loud, guys, put the headphone. Whatever it is, it's got to have a headphone jack. Google doesn't do it anymore. Apple stopped doing it. Now everybody's, well, if Apple doesn't have a headphone jack, it must be the right thing to do. Only Samsung still makes phones with headphone jacks. That's why I'm going to get a Samsung. I like my headphone jack. Don't mess with my jack, Jack. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk high tech. Tech Guy Podcast brought to you today by Fracture. Oh, I love this. In fact, I do. I'm so happy. I have some samples. So Fracture is a home decor company that takes your photos out of the shoebox, more likely these days, your digital shoebox, you know, your Google Photos or wherever you have your photos, and prints them. And prints them in a way that it's easy to hang. And this is, I love this. In fact, this isn't new to me because Lisa, I always, you know, I never printed out my photos. And I never, you would see them, but once in a while you go, you look them in the cloud. But my wife is a big one on this. And what she did when we moved into our new house a few years ago, she put up moldings along the wall that you could just lean a photo on. And she changes them all the time. And at first she would buy a print and she'd frame it and all that. But when we discovered Fracture, that changed everything. With Fracture, you print them directly onto glass. Look how they come. I should show you the mounting. So they come cleverly packaged, so they're, because, you know, they're potentially fragile, but they never break in transit. It's really quite amazing. In this insert, you pop it out. The insert has the screw, and the back, it's backed on foam core, has a little hole, so that it's very easy to hang. Although, as I said, we just put them on the moldings. This is the smallest one. So this is like a regular print, 4.8 by 6.4. Now, we put a black border on. You don't have to have a border. It could be completely borderless. Here's one without a border. I'll give you an example. This is a little bit larger. This is the 8x10. That's a picture of me from our trip to Machu Picchu. So that's borderless. They have an editor built into the site at fracture.me that allows you to put a border on, make the border any color, or take the border off, or crop the picture so that it's not borderless. If you use a camera phone, it'll be 4x3, but if you're using a pro camera, it'll be 3x2, and so that you'll have to crop slightly or blow up or put a border in because it's a different format. They do have square aspect ratios, though, which is nice, so you can take your Instagram photos. In fact, it'll import directly from Facebook or Instagram. Get you a little bit bigger one. This is one over here I sent to this was a great gift. These are wonderful gifts. I sent this to the family. Everybody in the family got this. This is Henry's graduation, a photo from now 4 years ago. Wow. That's my son and daughter. I made it black and white. And boy, when it comes on glass, whether it's color or black and white, there's something about the glass that just makes it beautiful. The contrast pops a little bit. The colors are more vivid. And the sleek design is great. Matches any decor. Easy to mount. Bring a special memory to life. Give it as a unique gift or decorate your home with the moments that tell your story. Don't let your photos languish in the digital shoebox. Get them out and print them with Fracture.me. They go up all the way to 21.6 by 28.8 inches. That's big enough so you could print like the family photo that goes over the fireplace. This is my family photo. I'll show you. If my family were a seal and a cormorant. Look how big that is. I can barely get it in the frame. Hang that over the fireplace. Put any picture you want. They even sell, you know, beautiful pictures of the Eiffel Tower and other places. You can print travel pictures. They have a lot of pictures on the site that you could print if you don't have one you want to print. But I bet you do. Go through your photos. Find that great picture. Then go to fracture.me and use the offer code TECHGUY15 at checkout, and you'll get 15% off your first order. I know a lot of photographers now who use this to highlight their best photos. Certainly I do, and it's just great. Fracture.me, offer code TECHGUY15. You get 15% off your first order. And when they give you the survey that says, where'd you hear about us? Make sure you say the Tech Guy Show. That way they know. 60-day happiness guarantee. You're sure to love your order. You got 2 months. If you decide, eh, I don't like it, send it back for a complete refund. Every fracture is handmade in Gainesville, Florida. You'll like that, from U.S. source materials. It's a carbon neutral factory. They call it their fractory. Fracture.me. It really looks great, and it's nice to get those photos out where you can see them. What we do is we'll print every time we go on a trip or at a graduation or another occasion, a wedding, birthday. We'll take pictures, print the ones we really want to save, and then we rotate them. It's very easy when it's with the molding. You just rotate them, and so you always have new pictures, and we have them down the hall. It's nice to have your pictures out in the open where you can see them and people can see them. Fracture.me, offer code TECHGUY15 for 15% off your first order. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Micah B. in our chat room, who is our TiVo guru, points out that TiVo is adding support for the website If This Then That. What? I don't know how that's going to work, but I guess that means you can say, I don't know, what? It supports the Amazon Echo and the Google Home, so you can talk to your TiVo. I'll be playing with that later tonight. Do you see the Echo has added text messaging via Android? Now you can text message, and it does something kind of interesting because, as you know, if you ever use Siri or Google to send a text message, sometimes the assistant doesn't understand you well, and it can be, frankly, a cause for problems. And I think Amazon, because it doesn't have any screen at all on most Echoes, realized there's a potential here for real misunderstanding. Text Lisa, I'm going to bring home pork chops for dinner. But instead, it writes, text Lisa, I'm going to bring home Beetlejuice for dinner. That's a whole different meaning, right? So what it's doing is it's sending the text, its best, you know, idea of what you might have said, but it also sends the audio of you talking to it. So that if Lisa says Beetlejuice, she can go back and say, oh, pork chops. Okay. I won't be setting an extra place at the table. That's a great idea. If you have an Amazon Echo, you can set that up in the Echo app. I like that idea. But you do have to have an Android phone. It doesn't work with Apple because Apple, you know how they are. Rick, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Thanks for hanging on, Rick.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Just fine. You were talking earlier about the speaker for showers.
Yeah, they sent me a waterproof speaker. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, man, I got to talk to Leo about that. Hopefully it'll prove itself before Valentine's Day so I could give it to my wife.
Oh, does your wife like to listen in the shower?
She actually takes the phone and puts it on top of the shower.
Oh, door. Is that a bad idea?
Samsung S5, and we've got to go to an S8, or you were just talking about the S9.
Yeah, you don't want to drop an S8 or S9. That's $800 down the tube.
Yeah, especially since we have champagne taste and a beer budget. You know, like,
don't I know it? Don't I know it? This stuff will get you, man.
Yeah.
So I haven't used it yet, so I don't. You know what I'll do is I'll set it up and at least have it play something before the show's over. But I don't know.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But the idea is pretty good. It's from a company called BassPal, BassPal.
Okay, great.
And it can't be very expensive. I don't know. I'll have to look. It's IP67, which means you can splash it. You probably wouldn't want to bring it into the bathtub.
But right.
You could splash it. You pair it with your phone before you take it in the shower and then leave the phone somewhere well away from the water.
Right.
Now, the new Samsungs are supposed, not the S5, but the newer Samsungs are supposedly waterproof. But I...
Yeah. It makes, they sold us the S5 a few years ago. They said, yeah, you can put it in the water. I was like, oh, could I put it in the water and take pictures? Because I'm in the pool,
right,
pool business, and it would really be nice.
What did they say to that?
They said, yeah, you can.
Yeah. You know, when you go to CES, you know, they have, they do this, and I think they did this with the S5. They had a water bath, and they had the S5 in there playing. So the device is IP67, which is the same, oddly enough, as this waterproof speaker. So I guess, you know, if you're going to be buying a new phone, why don't you try? See what happens. The problem really is that the speakers are not made to play in the water.
We take showers and not baths. You can at least put it, you know, in a decent place. But, at, you know, I have a lot more confidence in that.
IP67 is, in theory, a device can be submerged in up to 1 meter, about 3 feet of water, for up to half an hour.
Yeah.
That sounds like you could take it in the bathtub even. You could take, but I would be very nervous about. Now, the newer phones, I think, are better and better. The real question is the ports. You know, where anywhere there's a switch or a jack, that's where water can get in. They do make waterproof cases, you know, LifeProof and others make waterproof
Otter
cases.
OtterBox and stuff.
Yeah, OtterBox, yeah.
Actually, we do have cases, but it'd be good to get some plugs for those ports.
Do you know how much money there is in making phone cases? I was stunned. We were down in the for Christmas. We went down to the Virgin Islands. The couple that created OtterBox and runs the company, own an island. They own their own island, and it's nice. It's not some scrubby little island. It's a nice island. So
yeah,
there's some money. I figure you're selling about $1 worth of plastic. For $60, you too could own an island.
Oh, yes. In fact, we've invested in that island because, you know, it seems like every time I turn around, my wife or my daughter
wants a new OtterBox. You know, yeah. I have bought dozens of OtterBoxes. Well, we helped pay for their island.
We go with the cheaper one. You know, they're at Disneyland and it's got a new C-3PO or a Mickey Mouse. Oh, come on.
Oh, Disney. Disney's not hurting. They don't own an island, they own nations.
Yes.
Anyway, I'll let you know if this how this speaker sounds. This would be, I think it's probably inexpensive, probably a very good, a Valentine's gift. And you know, here's why I would use it instead of your ostensibly waterproof phone. If you ruin the speaker, it's not the end of the world. You ruin the phone, it's literally, well, not literally, it's close to the end of the world, right?
Oh, yes.
$26 on Amazon for the base bell. That's a nice Valentine's gift. You could tell her it costs a lot more. It's got a suction cup on it. You have to, obviously, all of these devices are rechargeable, and you don't want to recharge them in the shower. So you have to plug it in, maybe plug it in between showers, charge it, and then you can just go and you stick it right on the, well, it doesn't stick to my hand very well, but you could stick it right on the wall. There you go, wall of the shower while you're, and you can even make phone calls, which I think would be a hoot.
Yeah,
so I'm in the shower right now.
Yeah. Might be good to have on the dashboard of the car as a Bluetooth.
Oh, there you go. You could do that, too. Yeah, the suction cup's pretty good. I can't get it off.
Oh.
I'm stuck. They got their money's worth. They sent me a $25 speaker, and they're getting $1,000 worth of advertising here. But I think this might be the right solution for a great Valentine's gift. I think you're right.
Okay, now that brings me to a second question.
All right.
I told the call screener about that. So, in any case, for me, our bathroom is our bedroom in our apartment. And so I can see the TV through the mirror.
You don't want to watch TV in the shower.
No, but when I'm, shaving and stuff.
Oh, you want a speaker in there. Yeah, hang on, I can help you do that. Leo Laporte, we got to take a break, though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm in the shower talking to you. Remember doing that when they first came up with the airplane phones, right? Guess where I'm calling from? I'm calling from 35,000 feet. So, hello. So you want to have a way to hear the TV. You can see it in the mirror. I love that. But,
yeah.
But really, you don't need to see it much if you can hear it. So you need like a, you're saying I want a portable speaker.
Yeah, so I don't have to turn the TV up so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we got, you know, a flat screen, 4K, HD, whatever, Vizio.
You can, okay, that's interesting. You know, these TVs have Bluetooth, but that goes the wrong way, right? It's so that you can, actually, what do they use? Actually, maybe it doesn't go the wrong way. Yeah, it's for, yeah, so because you can use Bluetooth headphones with them, right? So, yeah, any speaker okay. that, like this, that paired, okay, I'll take it home and I'll try this and more review for you. But I guess you could pair this to your TV. If your TV had Bluetooth, I think that Vizio might.
Okay, yeah.
You know, a lot of these TVs, the Bluetooth is for a remote, I think, or keyboard. So that means they've got the radio. What they need is also the software for a speaker. They need audio software. So when you build in Bluetooth into a device, you put in profiles for the kinds of uses you anticipate. So they'll have a profile for the remote, and a profile for a keyboard. That might even be the same human interface device or HID profile. But maybe they don't have a speaker remote. I don't know. They can only try it. So wait a minute, Mike B says his 10-year-old Vizio will support Bluetooth speakers. So there you go. So this
okay.
you buy this for your wife, don't tell her you're also getting it so you can watch TV in the shower.
So the last year's Vizio, we got this a year ago for Christmas.
Oh, it'll have it for sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, check and see. Look in the documentation, see if it supports Bluetooth. And then you should be able to pair it to a Bluetooth speaker. And as long as you're within 100 feet of the TV, you should be able to listen to that speaker in the shower. Now, remember that the reason you generally don't want to use Bluetooth speakers with TV is the latency. So it takes a little time for the sound to get to the speaker.
Oh.
So the lip sync will be bad. But if you're looking in the bathroom mirror, I don't think you're going to care about that.
Yeah, okay. I'll check that. Yeah, I can live with that. Yeah, that brings me to another question, if I have time for that.
Sure.
Okay.
You're getting your money's worth today.
Thank you. Well, I wanted to ask these questions.
I don't mind. I love it. That's what I'm here for. Go ahead.
Okay, we have a TV in the bedroom, and we have a TV in the living room, you know, and it is just an apartment. And so, well, we would like, is there, and they're on cable TV. Is there a way to be able to sync the TVs? Because sometimes it's like nice to have both.
You want
TVs.
Party mode.
Yeah, they just basically.
Well, but both of them are on the same cable, right?
Yeah, they are. But sometimes, you know, we'll delay on one thing. A lot of times we're delayed.
Oh, yeah, if you're on a TiVo or something, you're not watching live. Because when my wife is watching American Idol in one room, I could put it on in the other room, and there's no appreciable latency. They both sound the same. It's like a giant, like we can watch a Super Bowl throughout the house. But, yeah, if you pause it, for that you need something like the TiVo Romeo, which if you're using a DVR, if you want, this is not a cheap solution, but if you're going to buy a TiVo, then you can do that with TiVo. You can have them, I think. Mike, can you have the Romeo on the main TV and have it playing back on the main TV and play the same thing back, I don't know, over Mocha on the other one? I think you might be able to. Let me ask our Bluetooth expert. You complicated it. Oh, TiVo Mini. That's what you need. Leo Laporte, I do the dance, wear the shiny suit. Woo! Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 asks Leo, props to our musical director, Michael Cozio, spins the discs, plays great tunes. He's just awesome. And he did something earlier that I didn't catch because he played a Buddy Holly song, and I did not realize. The chat room, fortunately, is a little more on top of things than I am. But Michael was playing a little tribute to Buddy Holly because this is the day the music died. February 3rd, 1959. A very sad day. Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, the Big Bopper, in that plane crash in Clear Lake, Iowa. And, of course, that Don McLean wrote the song, The Day the Music Died. American Pie, all about that. So now, Michael, you're right on top of it. Did anything happen to the Temptations this week? Dennis Edwards passed away. Man, you see, you're sending me, you're telegraphing me this stuff, but I'm not picking up on it. Well, we're very sad to lose Dennis Edwards. I love the Temptations. Anybody else die I should know about? Holy cow. Just keep listening. And fortunately, the chat room is very quick on picking up on that stuff. R.I.P. Dennis Edwards. Sorry to lose him. 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking to Rick. Let's see. Let's move on. Our next call comes to us from Steve, Oceanside, California. Hi, Steve. Did I push the button?
Hi, Leo.
Oh, I did. Hi. Oh, I'm not Steve. Sorry. Eric. Steve, you're next. Hi, Eric, in Columbus, Ohio.
Hey, thanks a lot, Leo. Thanks for taking the call.
My pleasure.
Hey, so I've started listening to you and Steve Gibson on Security Now for about 6 months, and I tell you what, you guys have opened my eyes to so many different dangers out there.
That's our horror podcast. That's the scary podcast where we talk about all the threats. Yeah, it's fun.
But also, I think I've done a couple of. You guys have taught me some things that I should definitely do that are pretty simple. I've started doing 2-factor authentication everywhere I can. I turned off my my anti-tracker. Like on my Firefox, and I guess one more is for people who are relatively new to being aware of the dangers out there, is there a checklist somewhere or something that
What a great idea!
Yeah.
What a great idea! There's kind of. I mean, this is really the basic one that everybody. I know what you're asking for something that's actually deeper. Then I'm going to give you. You want, and there are absolutely solutions where you say, okay, you need to use this browser and add these extensions and that kind of stuff. That's a little bit more personalized, shall I say. Different people have different needs or different issues. So I'm going to give you 2 solutions. For most people, I'm going to recommend something that I actually found out about when I interviewed the author of a book called Future Crimes, futurecrimesbook.com. He is a former LAPD forensics investigators, consulted the FBI and others. He's a very smart guy. And he created exactly what you're looking for, which is a simple, easy-to-remember mnemonic for the basics. His name is Mark Goodman. He's a futurist in residence at the FBI. That was his title. He calls it the update protocol. And I would say if you did these 6 things, UPDATE, you're safe, 99% safe. Then I'll talk about the next step after that, okay? So the update protocol, you can go to futurecrimesbook.com and click the link and get all the details. I think this is really great. And he's been keeping this up to date. U is update frequently. And that is absolutely the single most important thing. Not just your operating system, but any applications on your system that at any time contact the internet, they become the attack surface for bad guys. So updates on your phone and on your computer are so important. Passwords, we've talked about this before. Don't use any password more than once. And make your passwords long, strong, hard to remember. Then use a password vault, like 1Password or LastPass or KeePass or Dashlane, to remember those. Passwords are really one area where people often fall down. They use a simple mnemonic, like their kid's birth date and their initials. And that's easy to crack. Download is the D in update. Only download software for people you trust. Be very skeptical of third-party sites offering free software, especially if it's, your machine is under attack. Let's protect you. That's bad. And basically, I would extend the download rule to one more thing, which is basically install as little as possible. Every app you put on your machine becomes another potential for attack. Don't install software unless it's from a trusted source and you really need it. You really need it. UPDA, as in update, as in administrator. This one's a little out of date on modern machines. We for a long time recommended you not use a administrator account as your day-to-day account on Windows and Mac. Nowadays, both Windows and Macintosh are pretty careful to keep, even if you're running as administrator, to keep malware from becoming administrator. They pop up warnings. Apple requires you to enter the password. So while this is good advice, I think it's a little out of date. He says use a standard user account most of the time. You can ignore that one. You can also ignore this one. He says, and I'm not sure I agree with Mark on this, turn off your machine. It is true that when a machine is off, it can't be hacked. But, you know, he says turn off your machine or at least the router or Wi-Fi when it's not being used. You know, not a bad idea to turn your Wi-Fi, your router off at night or disconnect from the internet at night. Not a bad idea. But frankly, you're online and you're on the machine enough that I don't think that's going to protect you particularly. And his last one is encrypt. And this is really becoming more important is when you first install a new computer, set it up, whether it's Windows or Mac, turn on the built-in encryption, BitLocker or FileVault. Use VPN when you're on public Wi-Fis. Encrypting your data on your smartphone means it's just less likely to get stolen. Notice what's not in here in update is an antivirus. And he points out that antivirus only catches 5% of new threats targeting your computer. I don't recommend an antivirus either. Now, those are the update is basic. And again, futurecrimes.com will put a link in the show notes. But if you want to go a step farther, believe it or not, the NSA offers you, under its resources on its website, rules, suggestions for protecting yourself as a business, as an individual, on Linux, on Windows, on Macintosh. They actually have guides. I love this. Thank you, NSA. They have guides for locking down operating systems. And they're actually very good. So it's ironic because, of course, we think of the NSA as spying on us. But really, these guys are very sophisticated. They know a lot about malware. And they know a lot about locking things down. So the next place I would go if you want the next step after the update protocol would be that, believe it or not, the National Security Agency. Hey, we pay for them. Might as well use them. They have guides for Linux. And then you'll find after you get past that if you Google, you know, lockdown Debian or lockdown Ubuntu or lockdown Windows, that there are plenty of people who've written blog posts. But once you're an expert, you can start reading those, and because some of those sometimes the advice there isn't as good as other advice, and sometimes it can scare you more than necessary. We're not living in a terrible, terrible world, just a slightly terrible world, and certain things are prudent. I think for most people, update is really all you need. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So it is part of I monologued on you, and I apologize, Eric, but
yeah.
did that help you?
It does. And I guess one other question regarding the VPNs.
Steve should write something, I agree. But he has his own point. Yeah. He has his unique point of view, and experts don't agree. So once you get to that level, you got to read a bunch of stuff and see which one makes sense for you.
Exactly. Yeah. And regarding VPNs, there seem to be so many out there. And, you know, I can't tell which ones are actually trying to do right by people and which ones are just hype and fluff.
That is a really challenging one. And you can't go out and read VPN reviews and stuff because sometimes those are paid and so forth. So the challenge with VPNs is, you can ask me and I can tell you what I use. And, you know, that's a start. One is Tunnel Bear is very good. And I use as my VPN, Hotspot VPN from Wi-Fi Consulting. I actually use their hardware solution when I go to a coffee shop or whatever. They have a little USB dongle I plug in. It joins the Wi-Fi and then becomes an Ethernet jack for me. And it has built-in, it's a router, so it protects you, but you can turn on their VPN. And that's about $100 a year and then $30 for the hardware. But they're a good company. I'll tell you what you're looking for. You're looking for a VPN that doesn't log, okay? that doesn't keep track of who's using it or how. I'm always suspicious. I mean, I'm suspicious of free VPNs.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them will insert ads to pay for it.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a good one. Thank you, Beatmaster. Brian Krebs, who we absolutely trust, Krebs on Security, put up a post March of last year on, he says, post FCC privacy rules, should you VPN? And he has a link to a comparison chart for VPNs. So you can trust Brian. So look for Brian Krebs VPN recommendations. But there's two VPNs that I use and trust, Tunnel Bear and Hotspot VPN from Wi-Fi Consulting. They have a kind of a newer one that they call Black Hole VPN. That's actually kind of cool. Each individual connection is virtualized, so you're not on a VPN with anybody else, which is kind of interesting.
Excellent.
Yeah, I really like these guys. Why go to Hotspot? Let's see. Tiny Hardware Firewall is probably the right site. TinyHardwareFirewall.com. That's where they sell the hardware. But you know, you got to be really careful with VPNs. They are not all the same at all.
Yeah, that's what I've learned from listening to Security
yeah,
Now.
Yeah. I'll ask Steve which one he recommends, but it's hard to keep up with him. If Brian has a list, I would trust Brian absolutely.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well, thanks for the info, Leo. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Good work.
All right. Take care. It's disco time with everybody's favorite disco man, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and he is our own personal gizmo wizard. That's why we call him the Gizwiz. Dickie D joins us each week to talk about his favorite gizmos or gadgets. Hello, Dickie D!
Leo, how are you doing, pal?
I love the Mad Museum behind you. I can see video of Dick. He's on Skype with us, and it's great. You've got, like, all this great memorabilia.
It's super. I love coming into the studio, and it softens the blow of Mad not being in New York anymore.
You're still writing for him, but they moved the office.
Still writing for them. Absolutely.
To L.A.
Absolutely.
You can't go to Madison Avenue.
I can, but I just can't get in any buildings.
So what do you got? What do you got for us?
All right, so you know about heel wheels. You probably actually use them every day to come to the studio, right?
You know where I see them a lot is 10-year-olds at the airport. For some reason, so there's sneakers with wheels built into them, right?
Well, no. They go on any sneakers.
Oh, these are like roller skates.
Yeah,
we used to call them roller skates. Do you need a skate key with these?
No, but it's only the back wheels now.
Oh.
That's why they're called heel wheels.
I get it.
Okay, so Razor has a line of them. They're very successful. But Toy Fair is coming to town, and they will be introducing their jet heel wheels.
Whoa,
turbo.
Dude.
I don't know. Does Michael use heel wheels?
No, he does like anything that rolls, though. There's something about teenage boys. They just don't want to walk. They want to roll everywhere.
Oh, I thought you said he didn't like anything that rolls.
No, he only likes things that rolls. He likes his Segway. He has an electric scooter. He has a one wheel, which looks like a death trap. So I think he'd probably...
That's unbelievable, the one wheel thing. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, so the turbojet heel wheels will be out late February, early April, or March rather.
What's powering these?
They have a little 12-volt motor, so they're battery powered. Now, only one skate is powered, so you don't have two motors accidentally.
That's all you need, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the further you press down, the faster the skates go.
Okay.
They have a top speed of 10 miles an hour.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's pretty darn fast.
That is fast. And wide open, the battery will go half an hour, so you can go 5 miles. But you're not going to be doing top speed all the time.
Right.
And they go on any sneakers from kid size 12 to adult size 12.
They basically look like roller skates, but they're held on with Velcro straps, it looks like.
Exactly. And again, it's just two wheels in the back, so there's nothing in the front.
Yeah.
And so the further back you lean or the harder you press down, the faster you'll go.
How much?
So they're going to be $130.
That is a little pricey.
They're a little pricey. Yeah. They'll probably come down as time goes on.
Sure.
But
sure.
if you want to risk your life, this will be great. You know, kids will get on them and just zoom around the city. And,
you know, I could see them accessorizing these eventually. Now they got a battery. They're going to put speakers in them. They're going to put lights in them. They'll put a cigarette lighter. It's just a matter of time before the whole thing is just like a car on your heel.
Exactly. And then they'll have turbojet races.
Oh, no.
Yes. Right, yes, you can also buy a sparkler effect for it, too.
I knew it.
So you can press. Yeah, there you go.
See?
There you go.
So if you want to find out more about these, they're not available yet, right?
Not yet.
But you can go to Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, and learn more about turbojets, electric motorized heel wheels. He's even got a video. Did you try them on?
No, I did not. They had a sneak preview at CES, and I just happened to see another reporter do a header.
Oh,
and they said,
"Would
you lie?" I said, "No. I've seen enough.
Yeah, they're roughly the same price as an emergency room copay. So there you go. That's how they come up with the price. You can find out more at gizwiz.biz. Click the Gizwiz Visits the Tech Guy for the links to the turbojets. You can also click the What the Heck Is It contest. Chance to win an autographed Mad magazine by identifying a close-up picture of some sort of weird gadget. Are people figuring out what it is?
I haven't gone through the answers yet. The six I looked at are very funny fake ones, but I don't know if anybody's got it for real yet.
Yeah, you got to the end of the month. So quickly now, go over to gizwiz.biz. Gizwiz.tv is Dick's beautiful podcast that he does with Chad Johnson, and he joins us every week to talk gizmos and gadgets. Thank you, Dickie D.
Perfect. Okay, buddy. I'll
see you next week.
Okay, bye.
Steve, Oceanside, California. Last call of the day. Hi, Steve. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's an honor to talk to you today.
My pleasure.
And the last caller.
Yes.
You know, in my eye, you are Leo, the king of tech. You know,
well, that's very nice of you. There are others, but there's only one Leo, except no substitute.
Yeah, but you're the king of this jungle.
Leo the lion. Yep.
Anyway, I've had a Gateway desktop PC for about 7 years. It's worked flawlessly.
Yes.
Until I installed Windows 10 about a year ago.
Yeah.
And it worked okay for a while, but this fall update got me pulling my hair, and I don't have much hair left. So.
And you want it. You really want it. Although these updates, which Microsoft now says they're going to – they said Windows 10 is the last version of Windows, and once or twice a year they're going to do – what we used to call service packs. They don't call them that anymore. Just big updates.
Right.
And we had two this year. There was the Spring Creators Update, 1703. Mm-hmm. Actually, two last year, really. And then 1709, the Fall Creators Update. Microsoft said last week that everybody should have it by now if you're running Windows 10. Obviously, that's not the case. What's happening when you try to install it?
Okay, I've tried to install it probably 20 times. I go to forums and people say, "Oh, you got to do this," but it always locks at 84%.
Oh, isn't that nutty?
I have to turn the computer off.
Yeah,
I bring it back up, and luckily it restores the old version of
right.
Yeah.
So it's failing. There's a lot of reasons why it can fail. Have you been running Windows Update successfully all this time?
Well, I think I have. I think this one's 1709. Is that right?
Yeah. But you have all the hot fixes. Microsoft sends out every second Tuesday of the month. Those are all getting applied and working?
Right. I looked in the update area, and it says... finished
update. Sometimes if a previous update failed, it will not let you do the next update. So that's one reason it can block. It sounds like there is an issue with perhaps some of your hardware, and it's seeing this and it's blocking it. I don't have a fix for you. I would say don't force it. Continue to do the critical patches. Those should continue on Patch Tuesday. And every once in a while, try the Fall Creators Update. See if whatever's not working has been fixed. But it's not necessary. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.